I played hooky on that one today, too. Because Guy James was coming back. Guy James's new show premiered at White Rose Society at 3 o'clock Eastern Time this afternoon. And I wanted to listen. Because Guy is a tremendous talent on the liberal side of the talk spectrum. You know, where in a talk radio world that is populated on the right, oh, by let's see, pill crunching junkies, draft dodgers, sexual harassing, megalomaniacal ego freaks, fraudulent wannabes with good hair, and lady talk radio hosts who stick their fingers in the ears and go la 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 when they're confronted with the fact, you know, that's the right. Well, the progressive, the liberal side of things, the democratic side of things, got a considerable boost today with the return of our good friend Guy James. 3 to 5 at whiterosesociety.org. The streaming links are there, just like they are for this program. And it's going to be a refreshing addition to the dialogue that America needs to have. And Guy takes no prisoners. And that's what we need more of on our side. You know, we don't need any more Alan Colmeses. We need more Guys. We need more Me's. We need more Mike Malloys, Sam Cedars, Young Turks. We don't need any more appeasement. We're appeasement poor on our side. A great editorial cartoon out there showed Russ Feingold standing at the front, you know, had the door open to the Senate Democratic caucus, and it's dark in the room, and he's standing there with his censure resolution. Come on, guys! And little voices in the corner in the dark say, what if he turns on the lights? And the other voice says, don't worry, we unscrewed the light bulbs. So, you know, no, we've got plenty of appeasers. There's no doubt that we've got everything we could possibly want in the way of people who will bow down and scrape and kowtow and butt kiss to the Republican Party. What we need are people who will stand up and fight. You know, even Jack Murtha. Jack Murtha on, the Tim Russert, Meet the Press. You know, Meet the Political Sex Worker. He asked Murtha about Feingold's resolution, and Jack said, I haven't really read it. I don't know. You know, I'm just not sure. I haven't read it. Now, you can correct me if I'm wrong, and you know the phone number, 877, number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Is it humanly possible that one could live in Washington, D.C., know that Russ Feingold has a censure resolution out there, and not read it? If you're a, I mean, is that some sort of defensive posture? Well, you know, I can't comment on this today because I haven't read it. Well, you know, okay, I'm sure, I mean, Russ Feingold's not exactly my, you know, in my, he's not a snob. Give him a call. One of his staffers will probably walk it over to you, let alone fax it or mail it or email it. You know, it's I've been busy and I haven't really had it yet. Gutlessness. Cowardice. Let's see. No. When Mean Gene Schmidt did that on the floor, that was different. I'm talking about principled stands based on analysis of law and policy and, you know, the simple Sunday school stuff, the difference between right and wrong. This business of Democrats getting to stand up and say, oh, well, yeah, I haven't read it. Yeah, Harry Reid pulled that crap and it didn't fly. I haven't read it. Feingold? We got a guy named Feingold somewhere in the Congress? Isn't he the janitor? Oh, no, he's the guy. No, I know Feingold. He's the guy. Yeah. Feingold's Deli. It's around the corner on Constitution Avenue. That Feingold, yeah. Well, yeah, he's got a resolution? I knew he had good corned beef. Not so much with the resolution. God. you know, there's a Democratic Party out there somewhere. I had a nice email exchange with a new listener to the program and quite a good author. Publishes over at Information Clearinghouse. And, he was telling me that he felt, he'd left the Democratic Party for the Greens. Because we had to have, we had to build some sort of a viable difference. And I understand people have done that, but I would far rather get inside our party and take it the hell back. I don't walk away from a fight very well. Not when the other side threw the first punch. So, I hope I'm not particularly chapping anybody by saying so, but yeah, that's kind of where I am. And I want to mention something to you, two things, as a matter of fact. This is more in the way of housekeeping, as my friends Bruce Birch and John Fox like to refer to it. One, we haven't changed the appearance of it yet, but the website, my website, headonradio.com, has some message boards that are free for your use, and you're more than welcome to go over and make use of them. Agnes went through and did some yeoman work of getting rid of some negative, disruptive types and making it a more friendly place for people to discuss in. So run on over. Like I said, it's free. It's for your use. Agnes pops in there from time to time. I do too. Enjoy it. It's the show when the show's not going on, if you will. So go have a look and join up and have a blast. There's no sense in having it if we're not going to use it, no, is there? And also from that same vein, I would encourage you to run over to a new website. Brand new, up and running. This is the first time I've mentioned it. A tremendous amount of labor has gone into this, and our eternal gratitude goes out both to Bruce Birch and John Fox for their efforts. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Some of it is still a work in progress, but there is a chat room there, and it is for all programs that are attached to the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Be it this program, be it All Things with Bruce Birch, be it Fourth Estate Radio with John and Bruce, be it Homebodies with Grace and Rama. We can chat there now. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And there's a link there for you to jump into the chat room. Again, it's free. Because we're that nice. All kinds of free stuff here. And the as things grow and build, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com will also be the flagship website for the entire network. The shows I mentioned, and other shows to come in the future. So jump on over there, get chatting. Among other things, let's see if the thing can tolerate a load of listeners and chatters. We've got to make sure somebody's got to test drive this, right? Yeah, exactly, right. So. Me and that mouse in my pocket. Who am I kidding? I wouldn't know JavaScript from ancient Egyptian script, okay? But John and Bruce are debugging and working like crazy and making things happen. This is an amazing example of what can happen when progressives and liberals come together with a common task and a common goal. So run on in. I hope you will, because this one's ours. Nobody can run us off or anything, not to say that anyone has, but this is all ours. And what's that, Agnes?
Also much thanks to Peter.
Oh, well, yes, yeah, and lots of help, or lots of thanks to our dear friend Peter for his technical assistance. He's our computer god here, because otherwise I'd be sitting around going, oh, I can get to work the solitaire program. sit there and play spider solitaire for the rest of my days. And yay, there's Nanette. Hey, Nanette, welcome aboard. So see what's going on here? It's amazing. A million little things. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thievery.
Yes.
Just want to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones have been or were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, I just thought it was so...
Oh, my God.
I thought it was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway. Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
Apparently, on the right-hand side, on the right wing, the leadership in the Republican Party is not so cozy with the pro-life movement. They say pro-life. That's bull. If they were pro-life, they wouldn't send people to die in battle. If they were pro-life, you know, they would put money into a temporary aid for needy families, TANF, which is an entitlement. If they were pro-life, they would help with creating better pensions for us to live our remaining years in relative peace and serenity rather than having to work until you're 85 years old in order to make a living. If they were pro-life, if they were really, really pro-life, then we wouldn't be in the middle of a war.
Bottom line. Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Conservatives? We don't need no stinking conservatives. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Alrighty then, welcome back. 19 minutes after the hour, this is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and I wanted to jump out there with a quick story for you before the phones start lighting up. This is a disturbing story on about 16 different levels. Hun, can you talk a little lower there, please? We got to get the studio built with the glass booth and everything, so that so much extraneous stuff like kittens meowing don't go over the air and so forth. Or Agnes on the phone. The American Family Association, we've talked about them from time to time. A gang of hypocrites that are more worried about, exposed breast tissue than they are about you know, getting CBS fined for exposed breast tissue than they are for getting old, you know, Massey Energy or International Coal Group fined for, you know, killing people. Well, they've got their knickers in a twist over a case that is going down in Afghanistan, and they're hustling out there to try to keep, cover Bush's butt on it. A man is set to possibly be executed, in Afghanistan, where democracy is on the march. Yeah, they're going to execute him for converting to Christianity. Possibly. It's not a for sure thing yet. It's just a possibility. And it has the fundies up in a furor. We're going to talk about that here in a little bit. Let's go to the phone, though. Andy is with us from Wales. Hey, Andy, you're head on. We missed our Friday night, brother.
Yeah, man. Well, I thought I'd better call in ASAP because I don't want you all to, feel lonely without me, you know?
How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. I got a bit of a cold, pretty rough that way, but mentally okay. I'm not too stressed at the moment, you know?
Well, no more so than usual and the rest of us, because there's God knows plenty of stress out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, just kind of cruising along at the old average, at least. I think I might be resigned to the situation a bit, but hey, I'll get my anger back soon enough.
Yeah, right. They can't take that from you.
No. Have you heard I don't suppose you've been paying attention to much over here, but Tony Blair's embroiled in yet more corruption scandals.
What's the new one?
All right, well, the new one's, you got to love the name, Lordships for Loans.
Say again?
Lordships for Loans.
Lordships for, wait, he's selling out the peerage?
Oh, yeah.
God, they never change, do they?
No. Well, in the past, mm-hmm. It's always been accepted that if you want to become a lord, you pay enough money, you become a lord, but it's just that, you buy a title.
Right.
And that's fine. You can do that if you want. It's happened since the Normans invented all the baronesses and so on.
Yeah.
But if you give money to the Labour Party, and then the Labour Party gives you a position of authority in the legislature, that's dodgy.
Yeah, well, I would think so, yes.
So Labour came into power on a, we're clean, we're going to clean up government thing back in 97. And they brought in a load of transparency things about party donations. If you donate X amount of money, it's got to be recorded and who donated and where, what's going on and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they've got around that by having undeclared loans made that aren't paid back.
Oh, just £100,000 handshakes?
£1.2 million handshakes.
Woo!
12 people gave just under £14 million.
And just didn't, forgot to write it down.
Well, yeah, some of them were going to donate the money and weren't interested in lordships, but they were told, oh, no, you've got to loan it to us. And we won't pay you back.
Where are the people that are out there loaning money like that when I need them?
Yeah, right.
You don't need a couple of million pounds. Half a million probably do you nicely.
Oh, yeah, no problems, man. Half a million would be cool, man. But, it's just obscene the way these people just let's just do this, do that, do the other. We're all rich. Sort everyone else, and they think they can just totally get away with it. And, it winds me up so much,
Yes, indeed. Well, is anything going to come of it? I mean, Tony's embroiled again, but he seems to have slipped the noose on a few occasions. Is he gonna slide past on this one too?
I want him not to, but he probably will. I mean, yeah. It's hard for him to escape the blame for this, but it's kind of difficult for the other two political parties to say anything because they're kind of involved,
Well, yeah, everybody's up to their necks in it.
They do the same thing. So unless I can be bothered to get up and go and make a new political party.
So you've got Labour, the three that are embroiled. You've got Labour, you've got the Tories, and who's...
The Liberal Democrats.
Oh, okay, the Liberal Dems, okay.
Mm.
Is there anybody, splinter groups, fringe groups, is anybody clean?
Well, no, not really. I mean, most of the people who are in politics in Britain are pretty dirty, really, they're not Italy standards, we're not that bad, and we're not as bad as you guys are yet.
Yeah,
but,
you don't have a time delay yet.
No, I think he'd find it hard in British Parliament because you actually get thrown out if you call people stuff like liars. So the sort of language he uses about his opponents would definitely have him out of the House of Commons if he was over here. He'd basically be fired. So, But yeah, I mean, they're all basically a bit dirty on the side of funding. I mean, the people who've been on about state funding for elections for the longest are the Lib Dems, and they're the people I kind of support most of the time because they're generally pretty good, but they always fail to go for the throat, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, you know, they get just handed situation after situation, like, you know, here, have a knife, take it to the throats of the other two parties, open them up and drink the blood because, like, you guys can win now. And they don't. They back down every time.
They'll get them on the run and then not finish the route.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's not even like they have to get them on the run sometimes. It's like handed on a platter, you know? I mean, look, what is it about these liberals that run the parties that we apparently support? Why are they so cowardly? I mean, just because you're a liberal doesn't mean you can't fight.
Well, exactly, Andy, and that harkens back to the conversation I had last week that generated so much the thought-provoking conversation, both email, chat room, all of that. With the lovely lady up in Boston, a lot of people felt like that, you know, we can't afford to be nice anymore.
No, we can't. And we should never have been nice in the first place. It's not our position to be nice to fascist conservative. I mean, to me, the word conservative equals the word big business.
Sure.
The word big business, okay? And the words big business and government equals fascism. So conservatives are all essentially fascists. I mean, you know, they might not be. I mean, and let's be absolutely clear. Hitler was not a fascist. Okay, let's be totally clear about this. Hitler was a madman, right?
Yeah, right, right.
Mussolini was a fascist. Okay, Franco was a fascist.
Yeah, if you that's true. That's true. If you want to look to models for that sort of thing, yeah, you do look to Mussolini.
Yeah, when I say George Bush is a fascist, I don't mean George Bush is likely to get the Jews and exterminate them or any other ethnic group. What I mean is he's likely to do whatever it takes to ensure that he makes money and so do his buddies. That's what I mean. That's what a fascist does.
They're right.
They do whatever it takes. And if that includes certain people disappearing and being found...
Well, then those are just people who need to disappear.
Well, that's the case. You know, me, you, your lovely wife, my beautiful girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know? And all of our listeners at the moment, we're the people that need to disappear. And as such, we cannot afford not to fight.
Well, and see, you get that, I get that. The people who listen to this program, Andy, get that.
Mm.
It's the people out in the, you know, those so-called centrist Democrats.
Well, okay, here's the thing then. Right, everybody's listening to this show. Tell everybody you know that's a Democrat to go and phone the office of, was it Feingold,
mm-hmm.
and say congratulations, thanks for trying. And phone the office of all the other Democrats. Don't just phone yours. Phone everyone and say, I'm a Democrat, you represent me. No matter where I live in the States, you represent me as a Democrat, and I want to tell you that I'm not happy you didn't support Feingold. And you need to do that. You have to do that.
Well,
you need to call them. You need to speak to the people. You need to send letters.
Well, it's reminiscent, Andy, of what was accomplished and we reran the little segment that I covered on Friday evening from the filibuster for the filibuster. It's reminiscent of that.
Mm.
There were thousands of people absolutely wore their Democratic senators out and went from, you know, maybe two or three in favor of a filibuster against that monster Alito to, 19, 20?
Mm. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, what you need to do is whoever's got a day off tomorrow or a day off on Wednesday or whenever, yeah, you need to spend your whole day, get all the numbers for their like, go straight to the home offices of them. Don't bother phoning the Washington offices. Leave messages with the workers in their home offices because, first of all, they're more likely to be amenable to suggestion when they talk to these people than the staffers in Washington, just because they'll be off guard when they're not in Washington or when they're speaking to the people that aren't there.
Right.
So you need to talk to those people. You need to phone those people up who are true Democrats doing what they think is right, working for a Democrat. You need to tell them your boss isn't doing his job right or her job right. You know? And you need to phone every...
Yeah, it's not complicated. And in fact... it's, you know, there's a lot of dialing plans out there now. It doesn't cost a lot anymore, Andy, either.
No, no.
This is stuff you could do on your lunch break. This is stuff you could do. I mean, well, look, people on the East Coast of the United States can get an early start on home offices on the West Coast, and that's during the lunch hour.
Yeah.
I mean, it's utterly doable. It's a question of, once again, of, you know, hurting cats across the parking lot, as it were, of motivating people to get up, get off their duffs, and actually do something. And this isn't complicated doing either.
No. I mean, that's the thing. It's not like it's actually difficult to herd cats. All you got to do is think about it beforehand. You get a load of catnip or whatever works.
Right.
And they follow you.
Well, unfortunately, what they follow mostly is money, and thank God we don't have a lot of it. But, you know, no, that's what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, but, I mean, what you need to do is go to the people who, you know, go to these senators and say, look, we know you're more interested a lot of the time in what corporate junkies and corporate whatever you call them, you know, the lobbyists have to say. I know you like that because they've got money. But the fact is those corporations don't stay here and they don't spend their money on you if we don't have the money to buy their stuff. Okay, now the corporations can't see it because they're blind, because they're insane and blind.
Right.
And the politicians don't want to see it because, you know, nothing like vested interest to turn a person blind, is there?
Well, you know, I mean, you don't want to think that if you're a junkie, you don't want to think about your dealer going away.
Well, that's it. That's it.
I mean,
you know... It's just kind of, I'm getting angry again, thanks, Paul.
Well, that's all right, yeah, that's what I'm here for.
It's just so, you know, I mean, they're all just the same, you know, it doesn't matter where you go to Italy, you come to Britain, you go to America, these corporations are doing exactly the same game over and over again. I mean, you go to China and they're doing it even to an even more extreme extent, you know, and it's just this, we've got to take all the cash thing. And I mean, first of all, they don't even realize that cash is nonsense. It's meaningless. It doesn't mean anything at all. Especially when you're talking about the sort of sums they talk about. I mean, you know, how many zeros has Halliburton got in his bank account?
Yeah.
It's meaningless. There isn't that much.
Oh, and by the way, speaking of Halliburton, sort of led me over to another thing. Apparently, I got an article today, and I'm kind of crippled up here in the studio right now because I'm old school and I like to print my stories out. My printer's busted, so I don't have any print copy in front of me, so I just feel naked. But I got a story from a listener earlier today about the fact that, well, you know, we listened to all this stuff with the Dubai Ports World business. Well, now apparently the dictatorship of Dubai, or of the United Arab Emirates, whatever you want to call it, is buying a British, have you seen this? A British weapons firm that has numerous armories, factories, whatever you want to call it, in the United States. Have you seen this one?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me in the slightest. The British government recently sold off 49% of the British British Army's weapons labs, the people that develop all sorts of new stuff, you know.
Well, it
doesn't surprise me in the slightest. I mean, fact is, our governments are not in, you know, look at it this way, right? Everybody has to look at it this way, and you need to explain to Republicans this way who believe terrorism's a threat. If our governments are seriously worried about terrorism, we would have nationalized us, you, everybody, every other government that's seriously worried about it, would have nationalized all their ports and airports. They would have doubled the security personnel searching containers. They would have searched every single container, no matter how long it takes. They would not sell any weapons or weapon systems to any nations. They would not sell any weapons facilities, manufacturing facilities to any nations. All of that would be nationalized.
Well,
they would have instituted increased recruitment for the special forces and the armies, and they haven't. You know?
Well, right, and that line of reasoning just goes, it's very well thought out, Andy, and it goes out and it extends. If you're really afraid of the terrorists, then you don't send your infrastructure overseas to pay workers, you know, a dollar a day and chained to the table.
No.
Because
I mean, it's back to that, you know, Americans won't do these jobs. That's rubbish. It's the same thing over here. There are jobs British people won't do. No, it's rubbish. The people will do the jobs. You just won't pay them enough.
Right.
You know, you tell people you've got to be able to afford all this rubbish, and I want to use a four-letter word that sums it up much more appropriately, but I won't.
Okay.
You want all this rubbish, you've got to buy all our rubbish. So, you know, you can only afford that if you A, go into debt, or B, earn enough money, and generally people have to end up with A anyway. So,
well, let me ask you a quick question, Andy, and this is kind of a cultural or, I don't know, national thing, whatever.
Yeah.
We can't go to the store anymore, hardly, and buy a shirt to put on our backs that doesn't say Made in China, Kuala Lumpur, Bangladesh, or some Central American country. And I have nothing against any of those folks because
they don't pay their workers enough.
Yeah, right. But what about in the UK, Andy? I mean, you want a new shirt and a new pair of pants. It doesn't say made in Norfolk or anything, does it?
Well, there are still some clothes made in Britain. Not vast numbers, but we do have a very high tech linen cloth industry, so we can kind of compete to a degree. We've had a problem with China more than anything else. We've managed to kind of compete with all the other sort of states. I think in part because our companies have bought sites over there and paid the workers more and forced the other companies there to pay the workers more. You know, we did it cleverly, the way it should be done. You buy up a place overseas and you pay the workers there more, and then all the workers in the other factories want to work for you. So the other factories have to pay their people more. That puts the price of their clothes up, and suddenly it's not worth shipping them back to Britain, so your factory back home is now profitable again. That's a clever way of using capitalism.
That is good. Yeah, that's smart.
Well, it makes everybody able to buy stuff suddenly, you know, in both countries. But no, that's not happening with China. China's been oversupplying. Well, apparently they've been, like, dropping sort of 10-15% more than they're supposed to be dropping off. Economic trade war. I mean, China's been at war with the West since the Cold War, and they're not going to stop being at war with the West. They're just using economics, not guns. And, you know, most economists can't see that because most economists don't understand economics, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, no kidding.
No, well, I mean, most economists over here, same as over there, seem to believe that supply-side economics is real rather than just some weird fantasy that, Greenspan came up with. I mean, you know, the idea of paying someone £5,000 a year more when they're in the bottom wage bracket and then suddenly that increases the economy somehow, they just don't get that. They don't understand how poor people spend money, rich people don't. It just doesn't work for them. And, you know... They're the people that are running our economies, aren't they?
Well, yeah, and the fact of the matter is the wealthy get wealthy by not spending their money. You know, they play their high rollers on Wall Street, and they've got their real estate deals. And but you know, for the most part, you know, this economy doesn't run on Cadillacs any more than the UK runs on Rolls Royces.
No, not at all.
It runs on the things that ordinary people can afford to purchase, you know, whether it's what you get at the grocery or what, you know, a television set or, you know, things that are obtainable to the lower and middle class. That's what keeps this country running and yours as well. And I don't understand the people who think that somehow worshiping wealth is going to bring us to some sort of where is it they want to go?
I mean, well, what they want.
What's their goal?
They want two subordinate populations: one of prisoners and therefore slaves, and one of virtual slaves, the people who produce the slaves in the prisons. That's exactly what they want. Anybody that thinks that's otherwise is kind of insane, really, because. There is no other logical outcome from the policies we've been following than everybody who objects or is forced to turn to crime ends up in prison, and everybody who shuts up and gets on with it ends up diseased and wasted and malnourished and crushed. And that's what they want.
I understand. I often look, and it seems to me, Andy, that you're absolutely right, and that's where I see it going. But I can't imagine anybody actually desiring that.
Well, they do. Of course, they do. I mean, you ask your average airhead rich girl or rich boy, you know, whose daddy's just bought a brand new sports car, about, and they just won't understand it. They don't get it. You have to find the ones who are within. I mean, we call them the elite, which is a misnomer. I don't want to use the term the elite of the elite because that's even more of a misnomer. But you know, the puppet masters, the ones that sit in the background, like
yeah, the top, the people, the one tenth of 1%, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The people who sit there and think, need to make poor people in Africa die faster. Okay, let's make the government have a abstinence only program. That'll increase the number of deaths from AIDS and other things. Yeah, cool. You know, that decision was made, and that's why the Bush regime came up with an abstinence program. I cannot accept any other answer, because any good Christian would say, abstinence is all very well, but most of those people aren't Christian. Let's give them condoms.
Well, you know, so, you remind me of something that I got in my email box today, one from our friend CB in Northern California and then from the Greg Palast site itself. You're familiar with Greg Palast, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
His latest report points to a document that they obtained on the sly from the State Department, the U.S. State Department,
mm-hmm.
and it lays out the Bush plan for Iraq. And the thing is, we thought, you know, it's about getting more oil. This it lays it out very, very plainly. Let me see if I can find it real quick, because I want to share this with you. It's gonna it'll blow you away. Here's the doggone it, it'll take me just a second, but the text from the Greg Palast articles, it makes sense. Here's what he says.
Mm-hmm.
And what did the USA want Iraq to do with Iraq's oil? The answer will surprise many of you, and it is uglier, more twisted, devilish, and devious than anything imagined by the most conspiracy-addicted blogger. The answer can be found in a 323-page plan for Iraq's oil, secretly drafted by the State Department. Our team got hold of a copy. How doesn't matter. The key thing is what's inside this thick Bush diktat, a directive to Iraqis to maintain, this is going to make your eyes roll back in your head, Andy, to maintain a state oil company that will enhance its relationship with OPEC. And he goes on and he writes, specifically, the system ordered up by the Bush cabal would keep a lid on Iraq's oil production, limiting Iraq's oil pumping.
I was right, Bob. I was right.
Yeah, you were.
Well, I predicted.
I
was right. Uh-huh.
He said, yeah, Bush went in for the oil, not to get more of Iraq's oil, but to prevent Iraq producing too much of it.
It's to deny it. It's to deny it to us, Europe. It's to deny it to China. Now, it doesn't matter to us because we're almost self-sufficient and we're moving in a green direction. And if we have to, if George Bush forces us to, we'll transform our societies. We've done it before. But, you know, China are going to be pissed, man, when they get hold of this, because this is exactly what I said. This is to deny oil, to deny the petro-euro.
Right. Well, he goes on and he says, you must keep in mind who paid for George's ranch and Dick's bunker, and arguably, I guess you could say, Tony's townhouse as well, huh?
Mm.
He's big oil and their buck buddies, the Saudis, don't make money from pumping more oil, but from pumping less of it. The lower
Absolutely. The
supply, the higher the price.
Well, look at Hurricane, was it Rita, the second one from Katrina?
Yeah.
Didn't do a thing. Didn't break anything. And what happened? Oil jumped by, 50 cents a barrel or something?
Well, and we're seeing that all over again. Last week it was announced in the Lundberg survey, which is usually pretty reliable for U.S. oil prices. The Lundberg survey made it very clear that the prices at the pump are beginning to rise just based on the impending warm weather driving season in the U.S. Pump prices are going up. Oil prices per barrel on the futures market
are going down. Yeah, well, the oil prices have been going down for the last, month and a half.
Probably. Yeah.
And, I mean, I've got to admit it, we don't feel this too much. So it's not even a debate in Britain because, I mean, again, like I said, most of our oil's North Sea oil. And we do our own refining and manufacturing. And BP and Shell aren't allowed to act the same way over here as they act over there. I mean, for a start, they have to pay tax here. Not much, but they still have to pay. But yeah, the production and stuff is kind of like, you know, the government lays the smack down if prices start to rise too much. And the governments also take, I mean, over here we pay 80 pence in the pound as tax.
And you get something for it, don't you?
Well, yeah, we get like roads that work and bridges that are safe and stuff like that.
Well, right,
know?
Yeah.
Traffic police and things, you know. But yeah, I mean, you know, so the government, if it goes up too much, will take a loss in their taxes for a bit to kind of even the rise out, you know.
Yeah.
So we're not too badly hammered by oil prices, but you know, again, if it goes up too much, we've had like rolling stock stop the whole country like a couple of years ago. That happened. Yeah. The heavy
right, right, yeah.
What you call them? The kind of hauliers like just went slow down all the motorways and brought the place to a halt.
Oh, I wish we could pull off something like that in the United States. I do.
Yeah,
Andy.
But your haulers are all kind of independent, aren't they?
Well, I mean, that was, you know, that's part and parcel of, you know, going all the way back to when the government busted the Teamsters and Jimmy Hoffa and all. It was about busting the union. It wasn't about you know, taking corruption out or anything like that. It was about, so most of, you know, most of your haulers now are independents.
Mm.
And they
that you know, works against, like,
well, consider the guys who haul coal in trucks up and down our roads in West Virginia and kill people left and right.
Yeah.
Those guys, they're not. Can you imagine this? And maybe you can, maybe you can't. Those guys, Andy, are paid by the ton.
Oh, what?
They're not paid by the mile. They're not paid by the hour. Those poor souls are paid by the ton. So therefore, it becomes imperative to them to haul as much as they can on every run,
as fast as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, that means that the brakes won't necessarily work properly, and they won't necessarily see people in time, and fatalities occur.
Yeah. So,
I mean, do they have like minimum sleeping hours and brake time safety?
They're supposed to, but if you ask any independent over the road driver, most of them will tell you that there's two sets of books.
Yeah. Well, over here we have a machine that kind of.
Yeah. Well, we're moving into that automated.
Well, I mean, it sliced fatalities in half when we brought it in, and it, you know, it had a byproduct of doing it across Europe because European haulers couldn't come into Britain without doing it, and now I think the whole of Europe use it. I mean, it's basic safety. Does a company want its load to get there, or does it not?
Yeah, pay no mind to the sound effect there. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I mean, that's the thing. You have to look at it, and me, you, and every other sane person would say, well, of course they want it to get there, but then think about it. They didn't give a damn. They'll write it off as tax and insurance loss. They didn't care.
Yeah,
£10,000 worth of, you know, £1 million worth of cars, £10,000 worth of TVs. It doesn't matter. They just write it off, and the insurance companies fork out, and you, me, and everybody else pays a higher premium the next time.
It's a hell of a racket, isn't it?
It is. It's a hell of a racket. This racket is called globalization.
Yeah, and
it's free trade.
Right, and it's a racket that flourishes not on free trade, not on global trade. It flourishes on human blood.
Yeah, absolutely.
Andy, so good to talk to you. We're going to roll on, but
cool.
Sorry about playing hooky Friday night.
That's cool. Don't do it again.
All right, won't let it happen again. Thanks so much.
No worries, man.
Take care. Bye now. And a quick break, then we'll come back. More of your phone calls. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head on.
Hey, listen, tell me something, John. Do you guys eat a lot of mangoes down there?
Not enough to base a foreign policy on.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. We don't eat that many of them here either.
The United States is India's largest trading partner, and India is one of the United States' fastest growing export markets. And oh, by the way, Mr. Prime Minister, the United States is looking forward to eating Indian mangoes.
That's right. It's March Mango Madness. Nukes for mangoes, mangoes for nukes. Join Bruce and I, John Fox, this weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network. Catch us at fourthestateradio.com or headonradionetwork.com.
I found a reason, I don't need an excuse. I've got the time on my hands. You are the one to walk through. Yes, I'm...
Lottie in the chat room has fixed himself some stuffed pork chops with apple raisin walnut chuck.
You, me, Grace, Rama.
Mango chutney.
Hey, speaking of that,
it's all you need.
Mustard seed?
Mustard seed, yeah. That article.
It's not the same as mustard gas.
Well, it's pretty close. Mustard gas.
Join
mustard
Grace
gas.
And Rama, homebodies, Sunday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's food for thought.
Pickle in a jar on his desk. It's Bob Kincaid.
Yes, it is. You know, you get the extra day off, and it's hard to get back into the swing of things. But we're trying. Let's go back to the phones. Bob is with us from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, you're head on. Hey, Bob.
I'm here.
There you are.
Yeah. Hey, I got a shout out to Andy up there in UK.
Let her rip.
You're on the inside, or you're on the outside looking in, and we're on the inside, and you said something real important. Andy said something real important. You know what he said?
What's that?
It's time to stop being nice, Bob. I mean, I know you're a nice guy. I know you're nice. But, hey, Guy James came on the other day, and I said, Guy's back, yeah? Well, we're back, and we're fighting Dems. We are fighting Democrats. We are not afraid of them.
Right.
So punch them in the face until you knock their front teeth out of the back of their head.
Yeah, no argument from me.
Then it's time we get to it, son. I mean, I know Dad ain't doing good. I mean, things are tough at home. But it's time us Dems just get out there and punch them in the face. I mean, when they come up with this slime, la la la, stick their fingers in their ears. Okay, when they get their fingers in their ears, slam their face in.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Bob, but that's true.
Well, that's what Andy was talking about, Bob. This idea of, you know, getting on the phones, you know, calling not just your senators, other senators, and telling them to get the heck behind Russ Feingold's resolution.
Mm. Yes, sir.
Because I don't, you know.
Hey, Russ Feingold just wants to kind of censure him. I want to smash. I want to fight. I'm sorry.
I understand that, Bob. I want him. You want him impeached. I want him impeached, and I think you and I share a common goal of seeing. I want to see this man standing in the dock at The Hague.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I want him to take over Milosevic.
Yeah. Nice open cell. You know.
I want to see him. I want to see that boy sit behind bars until he dies. I really do. I want to see. Hey, I was listening to one of your competition here today, what's his name? I know you don't like him much. He's a radio guy out of Texas, and he's kind of a conservative.
Yeah, you got me lost here.
On
our side of the fight that I don't like, I like all of the people on our side of the fight.
Well,
because I don't, you know, I mean, you got to understand, Bob. I don't see some other liberal talk show host as being in competition with me. I view this like a golf match.
Golf.
You know, you can have 100 golfers on the same course. There's not one of them playing against the other. They're all playing against the patch ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I am. I want there to be hundreds of liberal talk shows out there, because that increases the dialogue, and that shows the conservatives that Americans aren't with them anymore, and never were to begin with.
Well, how about a conservative on the side of liberals?
Oh, who are you talking? What, Ed Schultz or?
No, not Ed. No, I was listening to a boy today. He had a thing on with Martin Sheen's boy, Charlie.
Yeah.
And I think it's oh goodness, what's his name?
Network.
What do we got going on?
Huh?
What was that?
Oh.
From Platoon to Red Dawn, one of my...
it's that guy out of Texas.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm at a loss. I'm at a loss. I don't know who we're talking about. But the whole idea is, you know, I mean, there are people out there who say that they're conservatives and they're mad at Bush. But the thing is, Bob, they're mad at Bush because he's screwed up their agenda. And they keep saying, well, you know, we've still got it, but, you know, we'll get it right next time.
No, no, no. This is a...
Conservatism is a lie to the American
Alex
people.
Jones, I think, is his name.
Oh, okay, sure, yeah, I know who that is. Yeah prison, okay. Prison
yeah,
planet and all that stuff.
Yeah, he's kind of, he talks conservative, but he acts, I don't know, I'm not quite sure what he is. He ain't like Andy or you or me, okay? But
yeah.
he has some points, and he gets some people on there that have... some of that conservative bent,
mm-hmm.
okay? And I'm not, I don't like it. I really don't. Okay, I don't care for it. I don't care for that conservative bent, but they, I think the worm is turning, Bob. I think it's, you know, kind of things are flipping over and people that are conservative are starting to see the error of their ways. And they're trying to look for a, you know, kind of a solution.
Well, and you, I think you also realize, Bob, that there are people out there that call themselves conservatives because for 25 years or so, that's been all there was. If you wanted to be a winner, you had to be on their side, and
that's
what they called themselves. They're no more conservative than you or I are. They might be conservative insofar as they've got to live with a budget every month and they got to pay their bills every month.
Well, yeah. Everybody has to do that.
Right. And to that extent, we all are. But the fact of the matter is, most of them, you know, all the polling data supports the idea that most Americans believe that, you know, it's one of our jobs is to look out for our fellow man, and that it's important to make sure that children don't go hungry in this country.
No.
It's important to recognize that they need to be able to go to the doctor, and most of America recognizes that. And so, you know, that thing in itself tells you that conservatism's a failure.
Okay. All right. That's fine. That's wonderful. That's beautiful. But you know what every American's job is? Every American's job is to stand up to the Constitution. The first 10 amendments to the Constitution give you that right to stand up for it. And then fight for it and just get out there and say, I will not be denied my rights, period.
Yeah, well, and not to look the other way when somebody who is, you know, obviously a Bush follower says, well, okay, here's an example, Bob. I stopped to look at a car the other day, and the guy comes out on the lot, and, you know, we strike up that car dealer, potential car buyer conversation that, you know, and, you know, eventually he says, you know, I think we need to stop spending so much money on NASA because, after all them scientists is trying to do is disprove God. And I looked at him and I said, wait a minute, look over there at the gas prices, buddy. How's that Bush vote working out for you?
Hey.
I stole that line from Peter.
Bob?
Yeah.
Why didn't you ask him, okay, so them NASA scientists are trying to disprove God, I would like you to do something for me, Mr. Car Salesman. Okay?
Yeah.
Seeing as though you're there standing in your perfect being, prove God to me, okay? Just prove God to me. Please, somebody. Jump out of the crowd.
Yeah, but see, you do that and they can't. You know, what I told him was
crowd. Come on.
No, what I told him, Bob, was, you know, I said if that's what NASA's spending its money on disproving God, then they can quit doing it because they did that a long time ago.
Can you prove God? Nobody
can, and you can't count the number of angels that dance on the head of a pin. You know,
I can give you samples of lots of things. But I can't give you a sample of God. I have no way of doing it. And I never even pretended I could. And that's the problem. See, they want to say God exists because they say so, because they believe he exists.
I've seen the bumper sticker a million times, Bob. Yeah. God said it. I believe it. That settles it.
Okay.
And, you know, that's
prove
the...
Prove it.
Yeah, go ahead. Prove it. Can't do it. Hey, Bob, we got to roll on, brother.
Good night.
All right, take care.
And good luck.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye now. Yeah, that movie's coming out on video. Yeah, it's already out on video. Good night and good luck. Can't wait to see it. Okay, time for a quick break, then we come back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I walk along the city streets you used to walk along with me. And every
Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Hi, this is Guy James. Remember me? As many of you know, I got the boot from the radio stations that carried my show a while back because I got a little too controversial for them to handle. Well, I'm back now, but I'll be doing my show 5 days a week from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time starting on March 20th. You can join us at theguyjamesshow.com or whiterosesociety.org. And if you like hard-hitting thought...
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
So let's do a second hour. Of course we will. I'm Bob Kincaid. A week in front of it. You know, Monday's my favorite day. It's when we get back together again and get to, you know, re-engage. And, of course, yeah, I know there's a bunch of stories out there. And, there's the evil, hateful side of Afghanistan, you know, where freedom's on the march, that one. But more than anything else, dear leader has embarked upon yet another PR tour. And this today's speech, I don't know, was it one for the ages? Not necessarily, but it was a humdinger. No getting around that. It was an absolute humdinger. The Cleveland City Club is where it took place. And dear leader decided that, you know, he's going out on the PR tour. He's trying to sell, you know, this is a significant anniversary today. This is 3 years that we have been willfully engaged in the massacre and rape of a country that never raised a finger against us. I mean, this is epic proportion stuff. This is biblical inmate. This is the kind of thing that gets you the frogs and the locusts and the rivers running with blood, what we're doing in Iraq. And so dear leader took the show on the road, and like I said in the first hour, there was all this blather about how, well, you know, the president, it wasn't one of his usual invited guests, only people were asking him hard questions, you know. I don't mean hard questions like what's the capital of Kyrgyzstan or anything like that. Oh no, we're talking, oh well, I've got what I want to do is play some of the audio for you, because some of this stuff we've got a first time caller on the line. I hate to make anybody wait. Hi, you're Head On.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Hi, this is Liberal Trucker from DU.
Oh yeah, Liberal Trucker, sure.
How you doing, dude?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
Oh, pretty good. I just found your stream tonight, and hey, how's it going?
Well, thank you very kindly. We're kind of proud of it.
Yeah, I just wish you could, wish I could find you on more terrestrial stations, though.
Well, so far that's zero terrestrial stations. So, you know, God knows I wish you could too, and we're working on that, and we've got some communications out to the folks at Sirius as well. I hope that we may be picked up at some juncture down the road.
Well, if that's the case, then that's a good reason to get serious, other than the fact that they carry the NFL games, you know.
Well, yeah, and I think they thought that was their coup. The thing, you know, I mean, when Air America slid over to exclusively FM, there were a lot of people that had bought Sirius that really got left out in the cold, and they haven't, with a couple of notable exceptions, they haven't refilled their liberal lineup yet.
Exactly. I was thinking about trying to get Sirius, so I could hear something besides Jerry Springer in the, 9 to noon, time slot.
Oh man, that's good. Well, I mean, I like Jerry and everything, but yeah.
You know, I like his politics, you know, agree with him 100% there, but, you know, there is just not very good radio, quite frankly.
Well, you know, I've heard that from a lot of people. I got to confess, I'm kind of ignorant on this, simply because I'm not up then, usually. I'm after the show goes off here at 10 p.m. Eastern, I'll be up working on stuff until about 3 or so, and then, you know, get up and do a little bit, putter around, knock off. And then my day is basically 11 or so till 4 in the morning.
Yeah. Well, nice hours if you can get it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's a little weird sometimes too, but I hear that about Springer a lot, and I guess there's some people out there that feel like he's not direct enough.
He's boring.
Well, okay.
For lack of a better word, you know.
Yeah, I do, and that's, well. See, that comes, that I think that also comes from the approach that some people take to this. You know, the right wing invented talk radio. For all, political talk was invented by the right wing for all intents and purposes.
Unfortunately, I agree.
And they built the model. And yep. there and some on our side of the fight have decided that, you know, the way that we succeed is by copying their model. And I don't believe that.
No. I mean, look at some of the, some of the hosts on Air America. I mean, Al Franken has nothing, in common with any of the, right wingers.
No. I enjoy Al's humor. Love Randy Rhodes. Mike Malloy is a personal hero of mine.
I never miss Malloy.
One of the biggest things I hate is that I never get to listen to either Sam Cedar or the Young Turks, because we're all on in the same time frame, and they do excellent work.
Well, now if you're awake at that during Franken's time slot this week, Sam Cedar is sitting in for it.
Oh, is he doing that again?
Yeah.
Wonderful, because I'm still up when they're rerunning Franken. In the early morning hours.
That'd be at 1 a.m. Eastern.
Right. Well,
Sam is co-hosting sitting in all this week.
Well, I tell you what, Sam has grown so much, and he's become a hell of a host.
He definitely has. I've got my own opinions about Janine, but that's another call.
I understand. That's the job of radio is to provide somebody for everybody.
Exactly.
It's a lot of what's going on here. We've got three shows added to the Head On Radio Network lineup now. Three of them on the weekend. We're affiliated with the White Rose Society, of course. Guy James just started his program with White Rose. You know, I know you're over the road a lot. What I'm looking for down the road, technologically speaking, and maybe it already exists, but these wireless internet receivers you can mount in an automobile or some such.
The only one that I know of right now is out of the price range, most of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wait a second. Maybe not, because I'm streaming your show right now from a Verizon Wireless air card plugged into my laptop.
Oh, wow.
It's a PCMCIA card, and it costs about $50.
Well, see, I'm,
pardon?
No, I was going to say that is, I think that really is the next step, because... Guy was talking this afternoon. He was talking about his new studio, similar in setup to what we've got here. He built his own studio just as we did, and that's the wave of the future. And what he had said was, you know, the old time radio stations where he used to sit behind a microphone and all those things are going the way of all flesh, because the big radio syndicates are buying them up, and the chances for people to come up through the ranks are becoming narrower and narrower.
Yep. I guess I misunderstood you right at first. I thought you were talking about the satellite receiver.
No, I was talking about internet stuff, because you know so many cities now have you wireless hotspots, and you can catch wireless a lot more easily than you used to be, and that's only going to grow.
Well, now up until about 2 months ago, that's how I got on the internet was Wi-Fi at various truck stops.
Mm-hmm.
But But this PC card from Verizon, I can get on the internet in any Verizon service area anywhere in the country.
That's amazing. And that's a heck of an advertisement for Verizon, too.
And now, if I'm in a major city, it's broadband.
Right.
Up to about 500 kilobits per second. Now, I'm sitting in Racine, Virginia right now, obviously not in a major city.
No, but you're not having any problems, are you?
No, well, I'm having to do your stream at the slower speed, though.
Oh, okay.
You know, because I'm getting an average speed right now of about 80 kilobits per second, but it kind of varies.
Yeah. Well,
but still, that's not bad.
No, that's not bad at all, and it's within the range of what Ben Birch has set up for all of his streams. So, because the idea is to make it as available as possible to everyone who wants it. I mean, we've still got a dial-up stream because there's a lot of people out there who don't have, you know, who don't have broadband yet, and it would be unfair, and frankly, I think in a way bigoted, not to provide something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Because I've noticed a lot of people on DU are still on dial-up.
Yeah. Now, that's why, hence the dial-up warnings that you see from time to time when somebody's posting photographs.
Yeah, especially California Peggy.
Bless her heart. She's such a sweetheart.
Hey, did you see that picture thread I posted where Kitchen Witch and I met up?
Yes, I did.
Oh, okay.
Wait, how long ago was that?
It was in early February.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I did see that. The reason I asked is I haven't been on there as frequently as I used to, simply because we're trying to grow things here, and I need a couple of extra hands and a day that's got 48 hours in it.
Hey, I'm a truck driver. Tell me about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Bob, you're probably coming up on a break, but I just wanted to check in and
Of you to call in, and I do appreciate it, and I hope you'll share your time with us some more in the very near future.
I'll do that.
All right,
good night.
You take care now.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye. It's our buddy Liberal Trucker from Democratic Underground. We've corresponded a little bit here and there, and he's out there on the road, and he sees probably more of America than most of us do. I'll tell you what, let's do take a little break, and when we come back, the Dear Leader audio. Oh, okay, just onions, okay? There's your hint, onions. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Bob Kincaid.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of my grandmother is also my lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
It's Grace.
We're actually very boring people, Rama. That's why we call ourselves homebodies.
Well, it's Rama.
Be sure. I mean, group sex for us is when we're both involved.
That's a
It's really, really smart.
Little Petri dish here in Vermont because you can experiment.
Join Grace and Rama, homebodies, every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the web at homebodies.ramabahama.net.
Thank you.
A man who has the heart of a conservative, pickled in a jar on his desk. It's Bob Kincaid.
So it's coming up on 20 minutes after the hour. I'm Bob. Onions. I said onions. Yes, I meant onions. We have come to expect, have we not, some just genuine insanity from Dear Leader. And there's always going to be some of it. And there were several of them today in his speech in Cleveland at the city club. But I thought nothing. I thought nothing rivaled it. Quite like well, yeah, he's trying to talk economics and he's trying to talk about, you know, they're Mexicans, and somehow, well, let it speak for itself, Bob, because it does.
I met an onion grower today at the airport when I arrived, and he said, "You got to help me find people that'll pull onions, or pluck them, or whatever you do with them, you know." There are jobs that just simply aren't getting done because Americans won't do them.
I used to joke about wanting a rubber brick. I've decided I need something I can kick. Because the first time I heard that, I wanted to kick something. The second time I heard it, I wanted to kick something. I edited it down to a soundbite. I still wanted to kick something. And I just played it for you again. And I still want to kick something.
Don't look at me.
No, I'm not you, Agnes. Daggum. But how many? It's like an onion. It's got layers. There's layers of crap to hate about that. I met an onion grower at the airport. The hell you say? Onion growers at the Cleveland airport. They're coming. I guess that's how far the infrastructure's gone. They're coming up through the cracks in the freaking the tarmac. I met an onion grower at the airport. Honest to God. He said that. You heard it. I didn't make that up. I didn't patch that together with... No, I met an onion grower at the airport.
I met an onion grower today at the airport when I arrived, and he said, "You got to help me find people that'll pull onions."
I met an onion grower today at the airport, and he said, "You got to help me find people that'll pull onions." Now, when I was a kid growing up in Alabama, we had the little green onions that sprout up in the springtime in the backyard. I mean, we didn't break our backs to get all the Bermuda grass and stuff. I met an onion grower at the airport. I met an onion grower at the airport. I'm sorry, you probably think I've got some sort of Tourette's thing going on right now, but I mean. Paris has flower girls who want flower for me, monsieur, flower for les mademoiselles. Cleveland's got onion growers at the airport. You know, right next to the Mooney dude and the Hare Krishna. My little flower for a donation, American flag pin for a donation. You want an onion? Onion growers at the, and then, you know, I need people who'll pull onions or pluck them. Oh, pluck you, George.
Where do they grow onions?
If you're going to talk, honey, put the microphone on.
Where do they grow onions in Cleveland? I've been to Cleveland.
At the airport. They grow onions at the airport. They met an onion grower at the airport. You heard him.
You can't get near him to speak to him. How is an onion grower going to get near him?
Well, you know, he's kind of a hardcore. He likes a fresh onion every now and then. Takes a bite out of it just like an apple.
Okay.
Onion growers at the airport. Or pluck them or whatever. Yeah, pluck onions. And chickens. They've probably got... Yeah, but see, that's the problem. In Rapigla world, they've probably got a machine just like... You know, there are automated chicken pluckers out there. Oh, I'm treading on dangerous ground with this. But there are jobs that people just won't do, and one of them is picking onions or plucking them or whatever. Now, you heard the laughter. The audience was just charmed. Oh, they were charmed. What in the... You know, George. Buddy. No, who am I kidding? George. you jerk. The reason that Americans won't pick onions is because the family onion farms have been replaced by great big corporate onion farms. And then, of course, there's always a phone ringing. That's what there is. No, I go to the grocery store right now. It's all Peruvian sweet onions. I hear they used to grow lots of onions up in Walla Walla, Washington? Walla Walla Sweets, wasn't that what? Onions. I'm sorry, it flabbergasted me. I haven't gotten over it since the first time I heard it this morning. This is just, it's craziness.
I met an onion grower today at the airport when I arrived, and he said, you got to help me find people that'll pull onions, pluck them, or whatever you do with them, you know. There are jobs that just simply aren't getting done because Americans won't do them.
There are jobs that just simply aren't getting done because Americans won't do them. Am I to understand that there's an onion crisis? I'm trying here. I'm trying really hard to the visuals alone are enough to just stop me in my tracks. I mean, the big old motorcade that they, it takes two jets to get George Bush anywhere he's going. One of them's for the security detail on the motorcade. And he gets out of the plane, the big old black limousine, and the Cadillac, it's a Cadillac, isn't it? Yeah, it is. And I've got this visual image of George and the little man running beside him with a basket full of onions going, George, you got to help me find somebody to pluck my onions. It's a lie, of course. If he spoke to an onion grower, it's the vice president for onion growing of Monsanto or ConAgra or Archer Daniels Midland. It wasn't some dude with a John Deere hat on who's worried about getting the onion crop in. It just makes me nuts. And that's not all there is. I've got a long exchange it's all planted. There's not one bit of it real. From onion pluckers to the African-American man who stood up and tried to talk about boxing with Dear Leader. Oh, and then there's this. Here it is. Yeah, just.
My name is Jose Feliciano.
No.
Yes, it
no.
Is.
Yeah. It's like the time I called a guy and said, hey, this is George Bush calling. He said, come on, quit kidding me, man. Okay, Jose. ¿Qué quiere decir?
Yo quiero decir algo aquí.
That's right.
We have a president who snorts like a pig. He really did that. And this thing was just chock full. Oh, it was just. This is a desperate attempt to get the poor thing's poll numbers up. I mean, I've never seen him seem more like a post turtle. And I mean, I don't know what kind of drugs they had him on. He was. I hollered for Agnes. I said, honey, you got to come in here. You got to see this. Dude is bouncing around like a Muppet. He'd laugh and his whole body would go up and down like somebody had their hand up there. Well, never mind. He looked like Elmo. He did. When Elmo or somebody's walking, and the neck and the head bobs and the shoulders go up and down. That's where the leader of the free world was today. the president's a Muppet. And, I mean, we're not talking about one of the smart Muppets either. I mean, my name's Jose Feliciano. No kidding. Like he didn't know. They knew. Everything was scripted. He was before an audience that wasn't invitation only this time. Yeah, well, the questioners were. you know how it goes. Let's take a quick break, then we'll come back to your phone calls at 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head on.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. As we hear more and more so-called conservatives starting to speak out on the failures of the Bush administration, it's become clear to this observer that, as New York Times columnist Paul Krugman points out, it's the movement itself that's flawed. As I've mentioned before, conservatives have been on the wrong side of every major issue since this country was founded. Want to know the ugly truth? There are no conservatives. There are no Republicans. Conservatism isn't a philosophy, it's sophistry, a convenient excuse to sucker people into thinking that there's anything more to what they're doing than robbing people blind. The Republican Party is just a front for the criminals working behind the scenes. Their only supporters are the ones who are in on the scam, or wannabe, or who don't know they're being scammed. And the leaders are the people who understand that the best criminals are the ones who control the police rather than fight them. And the really ugly truth is that they continue to get away with it. Whatever else you can say about the failures of the Bush administration, in one regard, they're extremely successful. They've helped make a very few people very rich at the expense of all of us. Once this crop is gone, however, that's accomplished, another will take its place and the cycle will continue. And that'll go on as long as people find that lifestyle glamorous and as long as there are gullible sheep to fleece. Hey, no one ever got poor by underestimating the intelligence of the general public. So here's to the Bush administration. Hooray for crime. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
A liberal light in the conservative darkness. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Everybody backwards skate. Yeah, this is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Fun. Let's see. Coming up on, 26 minutes before the hour. The phone number, of course, 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. And by the way, get in, headonradionetwork.com. I know, too much typing. I hope it doesn't bother your Carpenter's Tunnel Syndrome. That's a joke. I knew a guy who once called the malady that. He said, "My Carpenter's Tunnel Syndrome's acting up." No, but headonradionetwork.com. It's the hub for all the Head On Radio Network shows now, and brand spanking new chat room getting initiated tonight. going to ride the goat in the chat room and get all initiated. What's with the look? No, the brand new chat room. Get in there. Lots of folks in there having fun. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Or just go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and you can click the little link. It's easy, easy, easy. Have fun. It's free. And it creates a little community that, as we're playing. And, you know, I was having my little fit about onions, and our pal DJ in the chat room says, I just Googled onion harvesting, and all you get are pages of machines that harvest onions. With regard, and I'm hoping this is with regard to Dear Leader and not to me, DJ commented, what a jackass. I want to run out and make some little flash movie of a dude with a basket full of onions running along beside the presidential motorcade in between a couple of Secret Service agents. I need some help plucking the onions, Mr. President! I mean, this is something out of Green Acres, for Christ's sakes. Now, let's go to the phones. Our good friend Sue in Wales is with us. Hey, Sue, you're head on. Good to hear from you.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
I'm sorry. I'm fine. I was just laughing at the onion thing.
But it's so, it's funny, but it's tragic.
Like an ordinary person's going to get to talk to George Bush.
Or an ordinary onion farmer.
Yeah, he should have asked George to do it for him, but because he's not got anything on, has he?
Well, you know, he's not got any cows or horses on his ranch. I don't know.
He likes cutting brush and all that.
Put the onions.
Be good for him.
Right. You know this. Yeah. It's March. It's time. It's time to get the onions in. We'll be getting ours in here soon too. They've already got them in the grocery store.
Mine went out today.
Oh really?
Yeah. I've got some fleece over them though, in case they get a frost.
Well, yeah, it might be a little, might be a bit brisk yet.
Yeah. So main reason that I phoned up is I've been a bit upset tonight. Channel 4 Dispatch is a program that I watch. It's like an investigative type of thing.
Right.
And it was about the missing billions in Iraq.
Uh-huh.
And they focused more or less on the health service over there. And I basically watched a premature baby die on my screen.
Oh, God.
And they haven't got the basic things. This place is supposed to have had a $5 million refurbishment or something. Well, God knows where it went. They were trying to put adult, and Agnes will know what I'm talking about here, adult-sized cannulas into babies, which is to get drips going, because children are dying from dehydration.
The ones we don't shoot.
They haven't got the basics, things like a new premature baby. They haven't got the little masks, the things that fit the oxygen onto their face.
Oh.
And the doctor's there, literally holding it by her nose to try and get her to breathe. She was one of twins, and they both died.
Oh, God.
And I was just so angry. I mean, Halliburton's had £1.6 billion.
Jesus, criminy.
And the person that was running the so-called coordination for the health over there is some bloke, he's running the health for Michigan, I think it is.
Oh, Tommy Thompson?
I don't know.
Tommy Thompson was our health and human resources secretary until he bailed out. Now it's a guy named Michael Levitt.
He's got sort of a longish, brushback, grayish color hair.
Okay.
Big meaty-looking bloke wearing glasses.
Yeah, that's Tommy Thompson.
He's quite shirty with the investigator, the reporter. The British one that was asking. They had an Iraqi doctor was doing the taking the camera and that around for him and investigating, trying to find out about the health service. And his house got raided by American troops.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Funny how that happens.
And, sitting and watching a baby die on my screen tonight.
It's a little bit too much.
It's,
Well, but
I mean, the last time that I felt almost as bad as this was watching Katrina.
Yeah. Well,
it's that kind of thing.
And it's also the third anniversary of George's attack on Iraq. I mean, it's his war.
I made a failed attempt to get up to London on Saturday because I'm agoraphobic, but I managed to get two stations up the line, which I was quite pleased with.
Well, bless your heart. Next time, maybe three.
Well, yeah, you know, hopefully next time it comes around, there won't be a war, but...
Yeah, that would be nice, but I mean, you know that they've changed the name of the war now, right, Sue?
Oh, it's the Long War, isn't it?
It's the Long War.
Yeah.
You know, we're fast approaching the point at which we're going to have to say that George Bush has been unable to find Osama bin Laden in the amount of time it took the Allies to find Hitler. That's just pathetic.
The sad thing is there's an awful lot of references to World War II that they're making. And it's nothing like World War II.
No, not at all.
It's a made-up war.
Yeah, and that's why they have to hang a name on it, like the Long War. It's not the they have to change the name, Sue, because it can't be the Iraq War anymore, because Iraq is a free country now, and we he said so in his little speech today. Democracies don't make war on other democracies. But, you know, because it's the anniversary, Sue, we're going to see pictures from shock and awe. We're going to see, you know, those nighttime photographs of Baghdad just exploding. But the thing is, I view that kind, you know, by the same token that I was having my little hissy about the onions because of the visual image it was presenting inside my brain.
Mm-hmm.
I watch those buildings exploding in shock and awe, and I'm not like George Bush, Sue. I can't sit there and go, wow, what a big old explosion.
No, I think of the people that are in there.
Exactly.
I think of the people that are in there, and do you know what? For the first time for a long time, I actually wish and hope that there is a God.
I go through that from time to time,
that too. There is a God. Because my conscience is clear if there is a God. I can face judgment. Okay, I haven't been to church and all that, but I've been in communication with what I call my higher power, but I hope there is a God. Because they're all going to hell.
Exactly. See, that's where I come from, too. I want there to be a God so that there can be a Satan, so that there can be somebody for, you know, George to go and live with sometime in the future, for all eternity. A friend of the show, sent me a little joke the other day, said a Republican politician died, and, well, okay, it was George Bush, after a long and happy life, and it was a joke. And he goes up to the gates at the pearly gates, and St. Peter explains to him that before he gets to go one place or the other, he has to spend 24 hours in heaven and 24 hours in hell.
Mm.
And so they send him down to hell, and he spends 24... All of his buddies are there, and they're playing golf, and they're drinking, and they're carousing and womanizing and doing all the things that Republican politicians do and having a high old time, and the devil himself has black tie and tails on, and it's wonderful.
Mm.
And then the next day he goes and spends 24 hours in heaven sitting around on a cloud playing a harp, you know, singing Hosanna, the stuff you do in heaven. And St. Peter then says, okay, you make your choice. Which one do you want to go to? And he says, I think I'll go to hell. So they transport him down there and they put him in, they send him into hell, and it's suddenly a wasteland. There's garbage and filth piled up everywhere. And everything is desolation. The people are in rags cleaning up the filth. Everyone that he had been so hail fellow well met with. And he said, what happened? Yesterday it was so much fun. And they said, well, George, yesterday we were campaigning. Today you voted for us.
Oh, I like it.
But I know exactly where you're coming from, Sue, because I want that hell that they tried to terrify me with when I was growing up in the Southern Baptist Church. I want that sucker to be real, because I want there to be eternal punishment for the likes of George Bush and Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld and Condi and Pearl and all of these evil.
Yeah, every single one of them.
Yeah, every last one of them.
Yeah.
I want. Yeah. I want that to be real. The little demons that are carved in stone outside the Gothic cathedrals that leer down at the sinners walking through the gate, I want those to be real too, and I want them to gnaw on their flesh and their bones and stuff. I got me a little gargoyle over here, and he's just sitting there gnawing on a bone. And yeah, I want that for him.
Yeah.
For the evil that they have done on planet Earth, I want that for them, Sue.
Well, they're destroying it. You know, it's not just Iraq. They're destroying everything. And, you know, I mean, things like bees. You know, the bees are dying over here with some mites that's attacking them.
Exactly. And, well... You know, the amphibians, you know, they say that when the frogs are in trouble, the rest of trouble is soon to come for the rest of us.
Yeah.
I've read stories about the frogs and the toads in the UK and across America. You know, they can't stand to live in the world that we've created for them.
Yeah, you know, it's all going to pot. And what you were saying earlier, well, what Andy was saying about no more Mr. Nice Guy. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Stop being nice. The thing is, know your enemy. What makes them tick? It's money.
Well, for some of them it's money. For others of them, it's a very, very hateful religion. Like the fellow that told me that we need to stop space exploration because the scientists are trying to disprove God.
Wow.
You know, and the thing is, they have come together to create this mess. And we've got to learn to come together too. And, you know, that's been one of our problems as liberals, is that everybody wants their particular hot-button issue to be number one on the hit parade. Number one on the hit parade is getting rid of these fascist monsters, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. You know, they've got to go. There's no two ways. I mean, this stuff that's happening is horrific.
Yes, it is.
It's absolutely horrific. You know, and I mean, Iraq was not a third world country. It was a really modern country.
Yeah, women didn't have to wear burqas and so forth.
Yeah, but you know, they had everything that we have, the majority of people.
And we took it all away.
You know, they've got no water, they've got no, there's sewage running in the streets.
What, you know, and for the religious people, and I, you know, there was a very, very healthy Christian community in Iraq, and we bombed them in just as indiscriminately as we killed anyone else.
And the same applies to Iran, you know.
Yeah.
It's the same there, and I mean, do you know that they're in the lead in stem cell research in Iran?
Really?
Yes. I was watching the, you know, I sent you an email about, they were broadcasting from Iran, Jon Snow.
Yes.
And he went to, you know, all these different places. And, you know, they're doing all of this.
That means they have to be stopped.
And the main reason that they want, and do you know what, I know this sounds terrible, but I'd rather Iran had a nuclear weapon than George Bush.
Well,
I feel safer.
It's about the same thing, in some ways. I mean, we're talking about religious fundamentalists on both sides of the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's George Bush with a nuclear art, that guy would like to figure out a way to use them.
I mean, what I can tell with Iran is they're a forward-looking nation, and they know their oil's not going to last forever.
Exactly. I mean,
they make money on their oil.
Iran wants nuclear power for the same reason that India wanted nuclear power. They have a burgeoning population. They have a tremendous energy need. And they want, in Iran's position, they want to continue to sell their oil, because when their oil is gone, they're done.
And I mean, after the botch-up that they made with this so-called battle plan on Iraq, I mean, they don't realize that they're not going against Arabs with Iran. They're Persians.
Yes.
Who invented chess?
They did.
Yeah.
And
you know, they were master strategists. I can't say the word. You know what I mean?
Yeah, master strategists.
That's it. You know, I really can't say that word.
Well, Alexander.
That's where the chess came from.
Right. Alexander went into, he chased Darius all the way into Persia and wound up getting most of his army absolutely incensed at him because after a while, Alexander went native.
Mm-hmm.
He put on the Persian garb and started acting like a Persian prince.
Well, they're a very advanced civilization.
But see, we don't do military history, we don't do world history, or anything like that anymore. Our generals learn how to suck up to the leadership so that they can get that extra star.
Because I remember reading one article, I think it was in The Guardian, actually, before the war, and it was some general had taken part in these, like a war games type thing, you know, it was
a simulation.
Yeah, and what he did was that he was playing the enemy, and he used things like little small watercraft boats, little mm-hmm. boats, yeah? And he sunk a couple of aircraft carriers with them. And they resurrected the whole lot. They said, you can't do that. And he says, but I'm doing everything I can, you know, to get you out. And because they failed, they cut him out of it and resurrected all the troops and that had got killed.
Don't
they realize that war is not a game?
No, but they do this all the time. That's like, you know, I went to Google Earth the other day, Sue, and I looked at the Straits of Hormuz in the Persian Gulf.
Yeah.
And if we start anything with Iran, we're going to be so screwed. Because
oh God, yeah.
I keep saying the Iranians will sink a few old tramp steamers or whatever right there in the Straits of Hormuz, and nothing gets in and nothing gets out until those are out of the way.
Well, yeah, and I mean they've been sanctions on Iran for I don't know how long.
Right.
And as Jon Snow was saying, he said the life there isn't affected because what they've done is they've adapted and they've gone different ways. You know, they adapt quickly.
Yes, they have
and
to.
I think that, you know, a country like Iran, they've got the initiative to do that and to adapt. They can adapt a lot quicker than we can.
Well, exactly. And again, you get a bonus when you're defending your own country.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, I can very easily see us in a bit. Well,
I mean, how long?
I know there are those who say that George won't attack Iran because there are limits to even his stupidity.
Well, I don't think that's true. Actually, I think there are no limits to, you know, it's endless.
And then there are some that say he won't attack them because they know that he's no Saddam Hussein. He's not a paper tiger.
Well, no, and I mean,
that these people will fight back.
America plowed into Iraq to try and defeat Iran.
Oh yes,
they never did it. What makes them think it's going to be any different now?
Well, because it's them doing it, and they think that, you know, that's the thing. There's real, I mean, identifiable, diagnosable psychosis at work here in these people's minds, Sue.
Yeah.
They think that, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result.
That's my St. Patrick's Day joke, you know.
Is it really?
There's the Irishman that was going in to watch the Alamo for the fourth time. And when someone says, what are you going to watch it again for? He said, well, I'm hoping John Wayne doesn't get killed this time.
Bless your heart.
Oh, I mean,
you're going to get me in trouble with my Irish listeners now. You know that.
Well, no, I love the Irish. They thrashed the English the other day in rugby on... Yes, I was well happy. I love to see anybody throw, and they actually stole it from France. The Six Nations Cup.
Oh wow!
That's the only sport that I do follow is the rugby. I love it, and Wales put in a good show, very fast, and give the made the French work for their win, but the English, the one-trick wonders, I call them. One World Cup.
One.
Yeah, they won the cricket last year. They'll probably lose it this year.
Oh, I hate that. Well, that's okay. That's okay. We lost our own World Baseball Tournament over here, but you know that's another story entirely.
How do you get a World Series when you're the only one that? Aren't you the only ones that play it?
Yeah, we kind of are. I think we just played the first real World Series and we lost.
Having said that, my very good friend who I lost a couple of years ago, she used to sit up all through the night watching your baseball. She loved it.
Oh, it's a marvelous game. We had our first. We had our first get together for Little League for the kids on Saturday, and it just does my heart good to see those young kids out there fielding and batting, and you know we had an evil cold wind blowing through, but we had some sunshine going, and it, you know, for a guy like me, it makes your heart feel like it's just getting bigger in your chest just to watch it happen, the purity of it, and you know, kids playing for the joy of it.
Yeah,
I don't know if they do that once they're getting $10 million a year to do it.
Well, I think the, because they had this with our rugby, because it used to be the rugby union, they didn't get paid. It was, and there was a breakaway splinter that was rugby league who got paid. The difference is rugby league's got 11 men and rugby union have got 15 men.
Oh, that's a heck of a mob.
And, they're big lads.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They got legs on them like tree trunks, and I love it.
I'll stay out of that one, Sue.
Yeah.
So good talking to you tonight.
It's good talking to you, Bob, and I'm glad to see you back.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And you have yourself a wonderful Tuesday, okay?
I will, and the same to you and Agnes and everybody who's listening.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right, then. Bye.
Bye-bye. I'm not touching the legs with tree trunks part. I'm sorry.
I can't.
A couple of quick comments. One from our buddy Gene in Oregon. Ah, now, Bob, you know, dear leader misspoke. He meant to say, I met a cocaine dealer at the airport. Yeah, I can buy that easier than an onion dealer any day of the week. And from our good friend David in Nashville, with regard to the whole onion fiasco, he asked, was Dear Leader and the Onion Grower shoulder to shoulder at baggage claim? Protesters got to be 5 miles away, but onion growers can walk right up. Yeah. it's just craziness. I mean, this is just craziness. You know, hey, W, put a living wage on onion plucking, and there ain't going to be an onion in the ground anywhere in the continental U.S. Ain't that the truth? Because W's buddies don't like to pay living wages. I'm so tired. I am so unutterably tired of this hateful, bigoted, racist, pissing and moaning about illegal aliens. That goon from North Carolina. Oh, the aliens came to America, but they didn't come from space. They came from Mexico. They're, you know. Look. You know this, I know this, okay? I mean, we're on the preacher's turned around and I'm facing the choir. I understand. The reason, I mean, you want to, the reason the poor come here to get a job is because there are Republican businessmen paying poor man's wages. The poor are not responsible for our economy. The Republicans who run the factory farms and pay $1, $2, $3 a day. That's who's responsible.
So, have we been treating you well? That's our secret. Kill you with kindness.
Yeah, indeed. Tell you what, let's take a quick break. The phone number, of course, you know, 877, the number 4. Head on 877-443-2366. And we are chatting in the chat room at headonradionetwork.com. Jump on in. The conversation is fine. I'm Bob Kincaid.
going on.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle me.
It's pretty scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get me.
I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Parents, did you know that high school dropouts make 42% less than graduates? Someone will have to make up that difference, and chances are, that will be you. That means paying 42% of their groceries.
Ooh, more candy.
42% of their dentist bills.
No more candy.
Even 42% of their therapy sessions.
It's all my dad's fault.
Save your money. Encourage your kids to stay in school. For help and advice, call 877-FORA-KID. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Lots of people talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. I'm Mary Chapin Carpenter. Business and education leaders say that young workers too often lack the creativity needed to remain flexible and excel on the job. Well, helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math and English skills. When you look at today's educational landscape, one of the best places that creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. Music classrooms today are like deep wells of creative energy just waiting to be explored by young minds. Don't let it go to waste.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. March is Music in Our Schools Month. Music, part of a sound education.
Michael Franti from Spearhead talks about the new benefit CD for the nonprofit environmental law firm, Earth Justice.
I'm always involved in Earth Justice as an idea, no matter where I go.
Franti, along with artists Nora Jones, Los Lobos, Willie Nelson, and Bonnie Raitt, donated their music in support of life's absolute necessities, clean air and water.
Music today is not speaking to really what's happening on the streets. It's really important that artists come together, work on projects together, and put out unified voices about what's happening today in our planet.
In the United States alone, more than 70,000 people die per year from air pollution.
Keep on talking now. Yes, I will. Keep on singing by.
Music makes a difference. Give it a spin at wherewelive.org. That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now.
1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Welcome back. So we got one more hour to do or so, a little less than 1 hour. The phone number, of course, 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I said earlier I need 48-hour days. It turns out I need 72 because I got to go to foreign language class now. I'm getting, and I don't think this is spam, I'm getting email in Spanish that shows people holding machine guns, and I'm thinking this is probably something I want to be reading. Ojo, prohibido manifestarse la gente de bien, no se mete en esos asuntos, y el profesorado tampoco, la mano de la mano engorda el... Engorda? Is this like an ad for Viagra in Spanish? I don't know. No, Babelfish was no help. Babelfish, I put the thing into Babelfish, and, sometimes context is everything. I got prohibited to pronounce itself. The people of good do not put in those subjects, and the teaching staff either. The hand of the master fattens the horse.
That's right.
No, I think that is right. It's what Babelfish gives you. See what literalism gets you? This is literalism, it's the same thing. And Eve really did talk to that snake. No! The hand of the master fattens the horse. I'm sure that's got contextual meaning. If someone sent that to me, I appreciate it, and I'll try to figure it out as quickly as I can. And by Jehovah, I will. I appreciate it. I'm pretty sure it wasn't a Viagra ad, although I am getting a lot of hello, we represent oil interests in Kuala Lumpur and need to have someone do our banking for us. I'm getting that one. They used to be in Nigeria. Now they've moved to like Kuala Lumpur. Yeah. But to the phones, our good buddy CB from Northern California is with us. Hey, CB, you're head on.
Hey.
How are you?
Oh, I'm just peachy keen. I got my blood running to this afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
I've been waiting for a call back for the doctor, Good girl, not going anywhere. And so I'm ducking around looking at C-SPAN and Capital News, and I find that they've got a little video there of a Harper's Magazine panel that took place earlier this month.
Okay.
And, they had John Dean and Lewis Lapham and a former congresswoman who was in, who wrote the article in The Nation that was such a big deal a while back.
Right.
The panel was on impeachment. I should say that.
Okay.
Up front. And so you're listening to all these panelists talking, and Sam Sater was the moderator. Did you see that or hear about that?
I've heard about it. I have not seen it yet.
Well, I was doing just fine until it came to audience question time, and they were trying to keep it 2 hours like crazy, So they were on a tight rotation, and they kept saying, now, keep your questions in short question form, no statements, blah, 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 blah. Well, the audience was making itself apparent throughout the whole thing. They were cheering when somebody said something great, and blah, 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 blah. But holy Toledo, Bob, it was a lynch mob in there.
Well, in what regard? I got a note from you about that. Who were they wanting to lynch? Oh, well.
but they were fighting with the moderator, with Sater. And anybody who was trying to keep them, also the publisher of Harper's was trying to keep them in line and trying to keep everybody from standing up and making their statements. And I believe one of the women in the audience was, I believe her name was Judy, who called in at the filibuster thing.
Oh, really?
Who was going to lobby our congresspeople for us. Remember her?
Yeah, Patty, maybe?
Patty. Yeah. That was her name, Patty. The woman's voice was identical, but the camera was on behind her, and I wouldn't have recognized her face anyway because I just heard, but...
It's radio.
It was... Right. But, so anyway, the audience went wild. It was the entire audience was like, hey, forget all this legalistic terms and laying down tracks. Impeach him now. And, you know, it was just amazing to me that, I mean, they were really rambunctious. You could hear it. You could feel it, you know, just on this funny little internet video thing. I mean,
there is an undercurrent in this country that is sick and damn tired of what's going on. And yet, if you,
I'm so tickled to hear it.
Yeah. But the thing is, here's what we're up against. I've got all this audio from today's appearance by Dear Leader in Cleveland. This is one that I want to share it with you while I've got you on the phone, CB. This is one that just absolutely drove me bananas.
I can tell. I've been listening. You did get driven bananas. Okay.
Washington, where when you don't connect the dots, you're held up to Congress, and when you do connect the dots, you're held up to Congress. I believe what I'm doing is constitutional, and I know it's necessary. And so we're going to keep doing it.
Are you gone?
That's on the wiretapping. Did you not hear that?
I didn't hear a thing.
Oh, drat. We've got more technical difficulties.
Oh.
But no, Dear Leader, he said, you know, he was asked a question about the illegal wiretapping, and he just said, I'm going to keep doing it.
Oh, God. See, I highly recommend that, yeah, I mean, you don't have to watch the panel thing. You can just listen to it while you're running around doing whatever in your studio.
Yeah.
It was pretty good stuff. And I had a dream quite a while back where I was in a little alcove on a city street with about 7 people, and we were all talking about strategies and logistics. The streets were mobbed. There were stormtroopers out trying to control the mobs. And this, I didn't know at the time, but it was Karl Rove's twin, only he was a midget. And he was covered with this waxy substance. And he had been lurking in the corner listening to us making our plans and was going to go tell the authorities on it. And so I saw him right at the very last minute and took out after him through the mobs in the street. And he gets to the police station and starts ratting us out, and the police are about to come and bust all of us conspirators. And when suddenly I looked at one of the policemen, and I don't even remember what I said, but the thrust of it was, this guy is trying to ruin America. You know, he's the bad guy kind of thing, It all of a sudden it came over the cop who was about to arrest all of us conspirators that I was right, and he joined our ranks and threw this little creep in jail. And that's what this audience response to that panel reminded me of, that dream. And when I woke up from that dream, you would think that chaos in the streets and stormtroopers, you know, would be a bad dream, but I was grinning. I was happy. It was a good dream.
Well, you know, that probably, I'm not a psychologist and I don't play one on the radio, CB, but that probably speaks with to your, you were probably happy and satisfied because something was getting done.
Exactly.
And now I'm going to get emails, and you didn't send me the link either. Now tell people again where they can go and see this panel discussion.
All right, here I'm going to go get myself a new window here so I can read you. And it's not at C-SPAN proper, probably is on C-SPAN proper, but we go to Capital News. It's CAPITAL, not OL.
Okay.
News.org.
Capital, CAPITAL, news.org.
Yeah. C-SPAN's Capital News is the title of it, but the, you know.
And Harper's Magazine panel discussion or.
Yep, and it says down in the lower right-hand corner of the page, it says most watched C-SPAN video. And at the top of the list, they usually have like 5 of them there. Gore's address was on there for a really long time. And the date on this Harper's Magazine panel on Bush impeachment is at the top of the list, and it was on the 2nd of March. And Yeah. Go watch it or listen to it in the background.
Well, yeah, I will check it out this evening after the show, CB. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Because the fact that, you know, this guy is going to continue, Bush, is going to continue to flout the laws of this land. He's going to flout the Constitution until he is, you know, and this is the part that scares me. I despise this guy. I mean, I wouldn't go across the street to shake his hand, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But every time that America produces a really miserable president, what we've shown is that we can produce one that's even worse. A previous generation watched with their mouths hanging open in horror at the absolute bumbling stupidity of Warren Gamaliel Harding. Okay? And thought, well, you know, this is as dumb as we're ever going to get in the White House. And, you know, 80 years later, we get dumber. Now, this man is establishing precedent that extends beyond him.
That was the point, one of the major points that the panel was making. John Conyers made the point, a bunch of them made the point, that if we allow this president to go through doing what he's doing, it establishes precedent that, you know, and future presidents can take the same tactics.
I mean, and the thing that I don't understand with the Republicans in Congress is that, I mean, there are right-wing Republicans, CB, who get up every morning and pray that Hillary Clinton never becomes president, okay? George Bush is setting precedents that would put power in the hands of Hillary Clinton that would send right-wing Republicans into orbit.
Well, I
and they won't stand up to him.
I think that there's such a climate of fear now in Washington that there is, it's kind of like I suggested weeks ago, that I felt like they were being blackmailed. Conyers was asked point blank on this panel, you know, why hasn't more of the Democratic Party stood up with you? And, you know, because he's sort of Russ Feingold's counterpart in the House.
Right.
You know, he's got people needing to sign on.
He was Feingold before Feingold was cool.
Exactly. And even though he's trying to dot his I's and cross his T's and take this one step at a time and, you know, trying to hold down the lynch mob attitude going on there, he was forced pretty much into answering. And, you know, he danced around it, but he seemed to be saying that they are afraid. They are afraid that things have gotten so out of hand, so beyond the pale, that people actually dying behind this stuff, that they are physically, viscerally afraid. And we're all going, and I'm foremost among them, going, you know, hang your terror, damn it. This is your responsibility, you know, that you pledge your life to,
yeah.
You know, and all of us pledge our life to. So get over your fear and deal with it properly. But so it's not really even appeasement so much. I mean, it is appeasement, but it isn't really that they want to appease them. They're scared to do anything else.
They are that. And they are terrified of the other side. But please understand that there's a component of this, CB, of comfort. All right, there are Democrats in Congress who could not be dislodged from their seats with a dynamite charge. Okay, and I'm not talking about doing physical violence. That's a metaphor.
Right.
But I mean, they're safe. They will die. They will serve in Congress as long as they want to. They cannot be defeated, and they want, that's their interest. Their interest is not their constituents. Their interest is staying in office.
See, that's something I can't understand about Byrd. He's 922 years old. Why is he so terrified of losing an election?
Because
now?
He's never lost one before, and he doesn't want to start at the end.
Well, but that's all about Byrd and his ego, not his country and his people, for God's sakes. You know, that's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
And I don't want to think that about them. And you're probably right. Some of them, you know, feel that way ultimately. But I can't believe More
well, look,
of them
if our CB, if our party stands for, I mean, you know, and we're being told, I mean, I get the memos in my little email box every day from the Democratic Party leadership. The Democrats are the party who are in favor of cleaning up the lobbyists. The Democrats are in favor of cleaning up campaign finance reform, blah, 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 hooey. Okay, it's just a load of hooey, because the fact of the matter is, and I mean, I'm not going to do this Republican thing where you say, well, you know, everybody's taking Jack Abramoff's money. No, they didn't. Okay, but the thing is, if we were serious about reform, we could craft legislation that would be. We could craft a law that would be less than 10 words long. That would stop graft and corruption once and for all in Washington. I'll prove it. No member of Congress shall take any money except salary. 10 words.
Excellent.
Now, the punishment phase.
Ah!
The penalty for taking outside money beyond salary shall be death.
That'll do her.
Now, I'm not Castro and Che Guevara out sitting in the hills plotting. No. But if we will send a person to the death chamber for killing another person and call that justice, then what should we do to a person that we give tremendous political power, who then uses that political power to get millions killed in order to support the people who give him money?
Absolutely.
Why?
Absolutely.
You know, why is Randy Duke? I mean, they cried. I mean, his defense counsel said, you can't give him 10 years. He flew over Vietnam and dropped bombs on peasant villages for America. Screw Randy Cunningham. He ought to be on his bony old knees on the floor of his cell in some prison, thanking God every day that he has not been executed for the filth that he has perpetrated against the American people and our political and social and civic system. He engaged in a level of betrayal that makes Judas Iscariot look like a choir boy.
And Cheney are making him look like a choir boy, and when they're still in office.
Yeah, I mean, meanwhile, let's see. I got another story around here. You remember Catherine Harris?
Yeah, how could I forget her? I will never forget her.
Quote, finding inspiration from God, the last of the Mohicans, and the Lord of the Rings, Catherine Harris told hundreds of conservative Christians Saturday that she is a, quote, work in progress.
Oh, God.
Yeah, just showing off her new boobs.
Yeah, the sweater girl thing.
Was that gross or what?
Oh.
That.
I'd almost managed to forget it. Thanks,
CB.
Face
while she's standing sideways, look at my chest. It was gross.
Oh,
yes. Ew is right. So yeah, she is a work in progress.
She told the crowd that she studied under Francis Schaeffer in Geneva, Switzerland. Schaeffer is considered a founder of the modern evangelical movement, which encourages advocating Christian beliefs in public life. A Christian manifesto is Schaeffer's book, and he calls for Christian activists to demand biblical morality in government affairs. She said this is the good part, I redirected my life to the Lord when I was only in the third grade. I was blessed to be raised in a godly family.
Well, that's a crock.
Well,
and I'm beginning to wonder if there really is that huge of a fundamentalist Christian voting block, or if that isn't just the story they're telling us for the rigged elections.
No. I grew up amongst them. They're
no,
there.
I know there are a lot of them. I've met a lot of them, and we even have those churches here in California, many of them. But I'm
no, they're They're there and they act in concert. The American Family Association, as I mentioned at the top of the show, CB, the American Family Association is all in dither over this story arising out of Afghanistan about a man perhaps being executed for having converted to Christianity 14, 15 years ago.
Well, how can any of them, and, you know, how can any of them have paid attention to Ms. Harris's comportment in 2000 and call her a Christian? I don't get it.
I don't either. Hey, CB, I got to roll along. I want to get another call in.
Okay, good.
Take care, dear.
Good night.
Bye now. Yeah, just in case you were wondering, another book that Catherine Harris is into, Bill Bright's The Joy of Supernatural Thinking, Believing in God for the Impossible. I got to leave that one alone or my eyeballs will just come out of my head. Let's go to David calling from Maine. Hey, David, you're head on. Thanks for waiting.
No problem. I probably only have a minute.
Oh, no, you got all the time you need.
But you guys got to go to breaks soon.
We do breaks when we want to do breaks.
All right. Greg, I want to talk to you about Greg Palast.
Yes.
You have to consider something that I don't think a lot of progressives are willing to consider. That guy is an angler. And what I mean by an angler is if somebody comes at a different angle and somebody starts getting more attention from the progressive side, he'll take that and he'll rip that to shreds and he'll go from a different angle. And that's his business. And that's what Palast does. I used to be a fan of him until I started realizing the pattern. And I was like, okay, this guy really is doing this for the kind of publicity and the kind of whatever income he can generate from doing this. And that's what, and you know, that Alex Jones works the same way, but he works it on a much larger scale on GCN. What they do is a story will come out, it will look convincing, someone on the other side will have it, and they'll be like, yeah, but you know what? This right here is, and then they'll twist it all around and they'll regenerate it. It's like the business of this kind of media. And I think liberals have to understand one thing. When you have independent people like that, and they're depending from check to check, that they got to do what they got to do. It's like a hustler on the street.
Well, there's a certain, I think you're absolutely right, David. There's a certain amount of that involved with anybody who is not corporately supported. You know, because the other side of it is if you're corporately supported, you just whore out to the corporation and say what they want to have said. I can't throw away everything that Greg Palast has said as a result. I mean, there was a big stink over, who's the British MP who came over here and just gave...
Galloway.
Yeah, Galloway. Galloway, yeah, James Galloway just chewed Norm Coleman a new one.
Right, and then he went on the rampage on Galloway.
And Palast just tore him to pieces.
Right. And then he went on the reality show, which, for the life of me, I still can't figure. I don't know if you saw that.
No.
He went on a reality show in Big Brother in England. And he wore, like, pajamas, and he did all kinds of ridiculous things. Like, he drank milk from a girl's hand. And I was like, I think that the problem is these people get so stuck in the celebrity mode that they start doing really stupid things.
Well, I don't know. There is no amount of money. I say this. There is no amount of money out there to get me on a reality TV program. You know, I don't eat bugs.
Yeah, and that brings an interesting point, and I think you're going to be happy to hear this. Lionel on the radio, I don't know if you know him.
I've heard Lionel several times. He's fun to listen to.
Yeah, well, last week he was talking about how people don't realize what's going behind the scenes. And he kind of gave us an inside picture to what conservative radio business meetings are like.
Oh, does he have an archive? I got to hear that.
I'll try to find you the exact the exact hour that he starts talking about it.
Okay.
But to sum it up, basically what he says is you don't understand. He goes, the people behind the scenes. He goes, when you sit in these meetings, he goes, they are generally scared. And he goes, and I'll tell you why they're scared, because they realize that their era is coming to an end. And he goes, let me show you why. And he starts pointing out that every day they have to talk about the issues of the war in Iraq, the patriotism, the terrorism. And if they say the war is over, wait a minute, the war is over? That's my shtick.
Well, yeah. Now, see, I remember way back when Bill Clinton came into office and... let's see, what was that? Flush Flemball. And that was back when he was eating OxyContin like M&Ms, and it was America under siege. And so he had 8 years of Clinton hating. And the next, but his, you know, he always has to have some bête noir, some bugaboo to be after. And the thing is, it's not always going to be there. But the other thing is, they have the media connections. Lionel sounds like he's got his finger on it. But with the media connections that they have, they can always gin up a new one. I think a classic case in that instance, David, is the that big phony baloney war on Christmas.
Well, I think what's going to happen is, I genuinely believe this, is that conservative is getting played out. The term is getting played out. Nobody really knows. Lionel also went into this. Nobody really knows what a conservative and a liberal is anymore. The lines are blurring. He goes, it's just a sense of division, and after a while, it's just like, stop it.
Yeah.
That's what he's basically getting at. And then he started talking about how more and more corporations are going to latch on to this progressive media that a lot of people are, this is just like the test run right now.
Yeah.
And I think what people don't realize is that we have a cycle, we have a time window, and you better pay attention to that time window, because it's going to shift again. The pendulum's going to swing back and forth. So get in your shots, get in all you can, save up all your jewels and diamonds and gold bars, and whatever you get from this ride that you can capitalize on getting a positive message out and being as intelligent and thoughtful as you can out of this, but realize your time window is like, it's no different than the conservatives.
No, well, I think that maybe on our side of things it's a little bit different, because when you're, you know, I don't exist just to hate George Bush, David.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, when we get it out in the open, Bob, the progressive media,
yeah,
that the clock starts.
Okay, well,
that's what I mean. When the clock starts and we get out, I mean, Air America is kind of like that's like the door opening a little. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when you start seeing people get on CNN and, you know, news shows and just having regular hours and even like you know, documentaries dedicated to them, kind of like the way you saw Air America get a documentary,
right?
When you start seeing that, and when they start doing like tours, like Glenn Beck does with his Christmas show or whatever,
right?
Then the time clock gets started, and you just got to do what you can to build as much truth as you can. So when the conservative or whatever movement comes next, the Aryan stormtrooper,
oh God,
or whatever movement comes next, you just have to build as much truth as you can, so they can keep chipping away at it. But when it's finally their window's over, there'll just still be that little bit of truth that's still left that they can't deny. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think there's gonna come a time when, well, like I said, you know, Rush Limbaugh's not immortal, and when he finally shuffles off this mortal coil, that's going to be the end of something, because frankly, he is the best at it on their side. He is crazier than a sprayed roach. He's a junkie. He wouldn't know the truth if it came up and shook his hand, introduced itself to him, and handed him $100 bill. But he is their standard carrier, and there will be no one to fill that vacuum.
I said this on Andre Eglishan's show, which I recommend you listening to. He's really good. I said, never trust a guy with a smug smile and a cigar in his mouth.
That's the truth.
Never do that. I see all those ads, and I'm like, how can you trust that guy?
Oh, well, you can't. I mean, the thing is, you know, he always, that's his fallback position. You know, I'm an entertainer, my friends. He's not. There's nothing entertaining about that. He's a hate monger. Now, on our side, I think, and what you say about the ticking clock and everything is, I think, true, because, you know, Ted Turner started out with a brilliant idea that was absolutely poo-pooed by everybody in the business. They called it chicken noodle news when he started it.
Right.
And he had a bunch of kids who wanted to, I mean, it was almost like something out of a Judy Garland, Andy Rooney movie, you know, hey, we got a barn, let's put on a show. But he was determined to do it. He created an entire genre, and as soon as it was successful, he got swallowed up by Warner. And then you saw the conservative shift of CNN.
You know, that's interesting about these media people that try to make a niche market on it. Like someone like, for example, who's not on a big market, but someone I would say who tried to take a media niche market out of something like the electronic voting machines, Bev Harris.
Mm-hmm.
My problem with her has always been is she does the same tactic where she angles something and she says, well, I have so much research and so much investigative, but you know what, Bob? She's never brought it out.
You never see it.
You never see it anywhere. And you know what amazes me? And I hope to say this on the Hartman Show one day. I was like, Tom, why is it that when you have this woman on, you never bring these things up? And a lot of people who donated, I mean, we're talking thousands and thousands of dollars donated, that it's never brought to the table. It's like, why didn't you bring this to Congress? Why didn't you bring this to the Senate? Why didn't you? I mean, if it's so serious, you have such a damaging, incriminating investigation. You know who we need to? You know what we need to do? We need to PayPal George Soros some money so we can get Elliot Spitzer.
Oh, the idea of giving George Soros money just makes me want to cry, David.
I mean, Bob, that's what I'm coming to.
Yeah,
you
know? I mean, you said something about, you know, store up your jewels, save your gold bars. Man, I'm lucky if I got Hershey bars. But we're on the front end of something here, and what we're on the front end of, I think, David, is creating, like I keep talking about, creating this dialogue, creating this national discussion. What we're doing with the White Rose Society and the Head On Radio Network, as far as I can tell, isn't being done anywhere else. You've got a bunch of dedicated people who will absolutely hair lip hell to get the information out there. And all we want is for people to participate and join in.
It's really disorganized on a lot of parts. People who can really speak about issues, because they go to some place like Podcast Alley or whatnot, they post their podcast and they get two or three people listening to it, and they're like, "Well, how come I can't get 10 or 15 people?"
Right.
And that's the problem with progressive media in general, is that right now it's a little bit disorganized, and I think that. The more and more that happens, for example, I think that most networks, most shows on the progressive dial or whatnot, they seem to be latched on to something else on the radio station, maybe like five or six conservative shows.
Well, yeah,
and they're like at 3 a.m.
Well, you know, a classic case of that is the little radio station that I was on when this show got started. From the moment that I joined up there, the ratings started going up. Now we had a local so-called conservative, another local liberal, a dear friend of mine, and then there was me. And when I joined up, it created a symbiosis that more than doubled that station's ratings in the course of a year. Then the pressure was put on them to get rid of me. I disappeared. Shortly thereafter, the other liberal disappeared. The ratings are absolutely in the toilet, and they just canceled Rush Limbaugh a week or so ago.
Wow!
Because Rush Limbaugh don't make any mistake. You know, it's not all Swedish innerspring mattresses with NASA foam and patent baldness remedies. Radio stations have to pay even little teeny tiny radio stations in the fifth smallest measured market in the United States, which Beckley, West Virginia is. They have to pay thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars every year to run Rush Limbaugh, and it's going in the tank.
That's exactly what Lionel was talking about, of where a lot of people are scared behind those back doors because they see the ratings. He said he couldn't get into it too much because it was business politics and the radio station he was on. But what he basically was saying was that what people don't realize is, he goes, is they're not the numbers that they're seeing and the feedback that they're seeing. It's a different. He put it like this. Basically, it's a different world than it is in '89 in the mid '90s or something.
Well, there's a lot of truth in that, and of course, you know, there's some snake oil in the numbers themselves, because, you know, Rush Limbaugh every week, oh, my friends, I have 20 million listeners.
Right.
Okay, but
like
the thing is, that's 20 million listeners per week, yeah. And that is 4 million listeners a day, and frankly, it's the same 4 million.
I'm really, you know, I'm just surprised by the whole upspring of the whole... the trotting down the networks that are just putting out a different message. You would think that if it's not really effective and whatnot, and why they would just constantly be talking about it. And it just makes me think that there has to be something more than the ratings. There has to be like an inside type of
you're
catalyst attack.
Darn right there is. I mean, like I said, I mean, if you can stand it, if you can do it without having to put an ice pick through your eardrums, listen to a half an hour of Rush and listen to what the advertising is. Now, I mean, you're up in Maine.
Yeah.
It's a decent-sized little town. You're going to have some advertising. You won't hear anybody saying, oh, we're proud to bring you the Rush Limbaugh show, because they're not. They get their whatever advertising runs locally inside Rush is going to be run-of-schedule advertising. It's just going to be they plugged it in there because something had to go there. Now, the other side of that, when you get to the network advertising, you're going to hear, again, the Swedish NASA mattress ads. You're going to hear erectile dysfunction patent medicine. You know, call now.
Right.
Every time. Now, just whenever you're listening to some right-wing talk host, please understand, David, that every time you hear a commercial that says, call now, 1-800-blah-blah-blah-blah-blah-blah, you are hearing something where the radio station only gets paid if somebody calls to order that patent erectile dysfunction medicine. They get a chunk, they get a piece of the action, as the old saying goes.
You know, half of his callers are his haters anyway, so I can see why they're scared of Progressive Network.
Well, look how many calls he takes. My gig here, I can sit and run my mouth. I could filibuster this show and do it for 12 hours a day without a problem. I like to talk to people.
Right.
Rush Limbaugh doesn't like to talk to people. Neil Bortz doesn't like to talk to people. Hannity doesn't like to talk to people. O'Reilly, meh. If they'll kiss his butt, he likes to talk to people.
When you get bigger with your fan base, I think you're going to have to shorten your conversations. So you're going to have to start Kincaid Premium.
We can do or I go to 6 hours.
Yeah. One more thing. I don't know if you heard about this, but George Bush today got a question about how he feels the religious right is drumming up the apocalypse.
Oh, I missed that part.
It's a Crooks and Liars. I thought it was funny because he didn't answer the question. He just went into 9/11. Yeah, 9/11.
Well, you know, he did that with the domestic spying thing too. The guy got the question out, and well, 9/11. The business with the domestic spying too. He has now, and this is the kind of stuff that will get caught by the so-called mainstream media. He has declared that objecting to his domestic spying program is a, and I hope I spelled this right, it's a kerfluffle. Did you catch that?
A kerfluffle.
It's a kerfluffle. I've got it right here. And my phone system screwed up somehow or another, and I can't get the audio to you. Otherwise, I'd share it with you.
I'm sure I can find it someplace.
Yeah, well, you will, and I'm going to play it here in a minute when we're done. David, so good to hear from you.
No problem, Bob. I'll see you next week.
All right, take care.
All right. Bob.
Bye now. I do. I love the conversations. Because, you know, this is liberal talk, liberal conversation radio. A lot of this you've already got figured out, and you don't need me to, you know, this ain't Rush. You don't need marching. You don't need marching orders. You don't need talking points. You figured it out. This is camaraderie. This is collegiality. This is concert and common cause. But yeah, kerfluffle. Not kidding.
Could you explain why living within the legislation that allowed your administration to get a warrant from a secret court within 72 hours after putting in a wiretap wouldn't be just as effective?
No, I appreciate the question. He's talking about the Terrorist Surveillance Program that was created quite a kerfluffle in the press, and I owe an explanation to you.
And he said, and I owe you an explanation, and the next thing he did was 9/11 and gave no information. And then there's this one. I mean, and I go back to what Betsy Leander Wright said last week about we got to be careful about laughing at him because people who voted for him think, well, you know, it somehow invalidates them. But to the people who voted for him, I'd like to play this sound clip for a room full of Bush voters. And how's this working out for you?
For too long, America and India were not partners in peace. We didn't deal with each other because of the Cold War. And now's the time to set the Cold War behind us. It's over, folks. It no longer is. And let's think about the next 30 years. And so my hope is someday somebody will be asking a question, aren't you glad old George W. thought about entering into a strategic relationship with India.
Now, there's, you know, assume four walls in a room. It makes you want to bang your head into all four of the darn things. Old George. Old George wanted to enter into an agreement with India. For what? An agreement for what there, George?
The United States is India's largest trading partner. The United States is looking forward to eating Indian mangoes.
Really?
Damn.
You know, just damn. Hey, that blows your mind. Ben's with us on line one. Hey, Ben, your head on.
Hey, doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Doing okay.
You know, I just have to do a little bit of piling on here.
Okay, please.
Bev Harris.
Yes.
Well, I got lots of stuff to say about Bev Harris. First of all, she treated a dear friend of mine very badly.
Andy Stevenson?
Talking Andy Stevenson.
Right.
Okay. Not only did she tell him that he had insurance when he didn't have insurance, okay?
Yeah.
She never, ever, ever filed his W-2s.
Oh, my God.
He worked for her. Okay?
That's, yeah.
Now, you know, he's dead now, so, and the estate's settled, and someday the IRS will realize they didn't get paid. But near as I've been able to figure out, even though black box voting is 403B,
mm-hmm.
none of the required paperwork has
none?
Been filed.
Oh, my God.
Near as I've been able to figure out.
Well, the thing with Bev for me was kind of what David said. It's always a lot of talk about what there is, and then, well, you know, you get all Missouri and you say, show me. No.
And
it discredits everyone else who is busting their asses trying to prove exactly how evil these damn machines are.
Exactly. And if you will recall in the blow-off from the election, 2004 election.
Yeah.
You know, we had Randy Rhodes and a bunch of other people saying, why don't you, you know, Randy was smart about it. She says, why don't you all send Bev Harris a dollar? Just send her a dollar. You know, because you won't miss the dollar, and maybe she'll do something with it, because she's the only one who seems to be saying she'll do something.
Yeah.
Well, that, you know, power of radio, power of liberal radio, I'm told that wound up becoming millions.
Oh, my God.
And to which a proper accounting has never occurred.
And ain't gonna.
And ain't gonna.
Beautiful thing about cash, hard to trace.
Yeah, well, it all went through this payment service, so there should be, you know, and there's lots of credit card receipts, and someplace there was probably, you know, a 1099.
That just drives me crazy. That just drives me absolutely nuts.
Bev Harris was not originally on our side. Bogey, why is it every single time I'm on the phone you have to decide to bark at the cat?
Ben, he doesn't speak English.
Yeah, it's the master race thing, you know.
Er spricht die Deutsch.
Now, you know, Beth Harris was not originally a Democrat of any sort. In fact, she's not a Democrat. She's a libertarian. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I've been trying to do some investigation here because while she... You know, long ago she lived in Illinois, and she and her then husband had a chain of martial arts studios. And according to Andy, and this is why I'm checking this out,
mm-hmm.
Skipped the state of Illinois with a huge unpaid tax bill.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I've been trying to investigate that, too. I don't trust the lady.
No.
I don't trust her any further than I could throw her. I think she is just not. I don't think she's really all there.
Well, I've noticed, Ben, that a lot of the voting voting rights groups that I'm following or have been following over the years, her star has faded considerably. I mean, at one point she was a superstar.
Well, yeah. That's because she had the original disclosure.
Yeah.
She had the original information, which wasn't really her finding to begin with. Someone gave her that. But she trumpeted it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but back at the start, I and several other, you know, really hardcore techies said, give us what you got and we'll tell you whether you have anything. Because, you know, I'm quite capable of taking an unknown piece of binary code and figuring out what kind of processor it ran on and what it did when it ran there. But we never got anything from her.
Well, the nice thing is I think we've gotten to a point, Ben, where we don't need her.
No, I don't think we need her at this point. We can prove that, you know, especially with the fellow down in Volusia County there who, ran that unsupervised test.
Yeah, Eon Sancho, Leon County. Eon Sancho is a real hero.
Yep.
That guy's elected, and he is being dragged over the coals, and, you know, they're trying to disenfranchise voters in Leon County by taking their elected official away from them.
Exactly right.
But, he's done the hard work. And Clint Curtis.
And Brad Friedman.
Brad Friedman, you know, I'll
the Velvet Revolution folks.
Exactly, and you know, they great job with the Velvet Revolution gang getting the ad on in the Washington Post this Sunday.
That's right.
You know, but I trust what I get from Brad Friedman. I trust Clint Curtis.
Yep.
I trust Eon Sancho.
Yep.
I trust our friends up in Westmoreland County, PA, and around Pittsburgh, who are busting their asses to save Pittsburgh from these god awful machines.
Yep, and there's a statistician, a gentleman, he's actually very sick right now, I'm told, who goes by Truth Is All online.
Mm-hmm.
And he has crunched the numbers three ways from Sunday to demonstrate that there are significant, you know, irregularities in everything that has ever been counted by electronic.
Well, and it's gone so far that, friends of ours like Fritz out in New Mexico, who calls in from time to time, the organization that he's involved with was successful enough that they got the governor of New Mexico, Bill Richardson, to back away from these monstrous things.
Yep.
I mean, it's possible to make progress on this. And the thing is, I wind up wondering, Ben, how much, you know, early on, I got to wonder how much damage was done by Bev.
I think she did the whole movement against the electronic voting a lot of damage. I really believe that. For one thing, you know, there's a class of people in this country who give a damn about the issues, but they're so busy running their lives. They've got little kids. They've got two jobs.
Yeah, the stuff we talk about here.
That you know, you get their attention for a few minutes. And Randy Rhodes says, help this issue and send a few dollars to Bev Harris, and you do, and you then file that away as something I've done something about.
Yeah.
And you move on to the next thing because your life is a busy place.
You're absolutely right. You
and know, you're never going to get that person to pay attention to that issue again.
And it's, you know, I'm not trying to go with a cheesy segue or anything, Ben, but it's what we're, you know, you and I don't mind anybody who listens to this show know that you and I are actively engaged in, along with Bruce Birch, along with John Fox, with building the Head On Radio Network.
Oh, you betcha.
And this is something that people can get their minds around because it's something that's there every day.
Well, we're gonna be there every day. We're gonna be there 24/7. 365 and one quarter days a year.
You
and
scientist,
you know,
you.
I think that you will find that once we have really got our feet under ourselves and are rolling along and are on a few dozen radio stations, that something very unexpected is going to occur.
I hope it involves money.
It does.
No, I'm kidding.
But no, the unexpected thing that's going to occur is that Air America Radio is going to get better.
Well, everything gets better when it has competition.
Precisely. A second
towns with one
progressive network is exactly what Air America needs. You know, I don't think we'll ever be the number one liberal progressive network. But you know what? I really think that we'd be very happy being the number two having numbers just like they do now when they are running like Clear Channel.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mean, towns with one, little towns that have one restaurant, people don't eat well.
No.
But when you get that second and third restaurant in there, everybody eats well and everybody prospers.
I'm reminded of a little restaurant I saw in a little town in the middle of Iowa back when I was, you know, during my first marriage, and my in-laws were all scattered over the far west side of Iowa. It was in this itty-bitty little town. It was Sam and Ella's.
You know, what's that old line about never eat at a place called Mom's? Leave Sam and Ella's the hell alone, too, while you're at it.
I'm sure it was a joke, but it was the only restaurant in town.
There was a little place here called somewhere in West Virginia. I can't remember where. It was just called Zatz, Z-A-T apostrophe S, and underneath it, the subtitle, Fine Food.
Well, you take care, my friend.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Did I say Andy Rooney? I got an email. Oh, God, I love you guys. Yeah, Judy Garland never did any movies with Andy Rooney. Jesus. I got to quit taking nights off. Oh, man, I don't know. I don't want to know about it. I don't want to know the hardwiring and the synaptic response that came up with that one. Okay, guys, thanks. I got to admit, it was a little weird for me tonight just because missing Friday just... You know, that's. I just feel like I geared down into second out of fifth or something. But thanks to you guys for pulling me through. I really appreciate it. Andy Rooney. I said Andy Rooney. You know, that's what the email topic says. Andy? Andy Rooney? It's Mickey, you doofus. Yeah, I'm a doofus. We've. Ben, you can hide this archive. Thanks, everybody, though. Seriously, the show tonight was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes, announced by our good friend, Brian Reznor. Our engineer is Randy Kerboy, and Ben Birch, whom you just heard, is part and parcel of this whole affair at whiterosesociety.org. He maintains the stream and the archives of this and many other fine liberal talk programs. Got that fundraiser going on. He's close. He's almost to the goal. Needs a little bit of help. A little bit of help is also called for our good friend Joe Vecchio of cupofjoe.blogspot.com. Some of the most incisive analysis and commentary you are likely to run across on the web. Do the right thing. And the show is brought to you every night, of course, by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream. And when we get to where Ben is talking about with the Head On Radio Network, the first thing that will have to be said is that Carpenters and Millwrights built the Head On Radio Network. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.